podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Radio Network's 200 stations all over the country on Saturday, July 18th, 2020. This is episode 1711. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast comes to you from TWiT's LastPass studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether they're working in the office or remotely. Visit LastPass.com/TWiT to learn more. This episode of the Tech Guy brought to you by ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is an app that reroutes your internet connection through their secure servers so your internet service provider can't see the sites you visit. For 3 extra months free with a 1-year package, go to expressvpn.com/techguy. And by LastPass. Give your IT department a break and supply them with the tools that really protect your business. Visit lastpass.com/twit to find out how they can help you. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, augmented reality, virtual reality, real reality. 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. 888, I cracked myself up. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can still reach me outside that area. You just got to use Skype out or something like that, and you'll be able to get me, no problem. I'm here. It shouldn't cost you anything. Let's see here. What happened over the week? A little thing called a Twitter hack. Oh, that was wild. Now, I know for most people, Twitter is not important. Twitter is not, you know, a major part of people's lives. Facebook is, maybe Instagram is. Some people like Twitter, you know, but really it's the reason Twitter has this outsized importance. Well, it's a number of reasons. One is because a lot of journalists use it and, you know, they're always paying attention as if the outrage storms on Twitter make a difference, which they don't. Not at all. Then the other reason is because the president uses it. It is his chief form of communication with the public. He's actually, executed presidential decrees on the tweets. So it's important for that reason. If no one else were on Twitter, it would be important to follow Twitter just to see what President Trump's saying. There are other reasons to be on there, but that, you know, so it has an importance beyond its actual importance in the world because, you know, there's about 300 million users, but, you know, in the U.S., maybe, I don't know, 1 in 5 people are even aware of it or use it. That's my guess. I bet it's even smaller than that. However, when there is a Twitter hack, it's a big deal. And in fact, it was a little weird. About 1 o'clock Pacific time, 4 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday, all of a sudden, these tweets start showing up. At first, it's just on Bitcoin accounts like Binance. Hey, and because of COVID-19, I want to give back to my community. Every Bitcoin, now Bitcoin, I have to explain, I guess, you probably heard of it, is a cryptocurrency. It's a currency that has kind of a made-up value. Well, all currency does, but it's kind of made up. Right now, it's almost $10,000 per Bitcoin. You can buy Bitcoin with American dollars or other, you know, currencies, or you can generate it. Most people can't and don't have the ability to generate it because it takes a lot of power. It's so expensive in terms of electricity that you can only do it if you live in a hydroelectric dam, which sounds like hyperbole, except that that's where a lot of these Bitcoin miners live, is actually in hydroelectric dams and other places where the cost of energy is low to nothing. So you can't make it that way. People can give it to you in exchange. You create a wallet. I have a wallet, Bitcoin wallet. I forgot my password, so it's not much good to me. I've got 7 Bitcoins in there. That's a lot of money. But I can't get to them. That's all right. They're safe there, mostly. Every Bitcoin wallet has a unique number associated with it. Not a name, not an address, not a phone number, no identifiable information, just a number. So it's widely used by bad guys, hackers, and others to exchange value. So this tweet on Binance, which is a Bitcoin exchange, said, because of COVID, I want to give back to my community. For every Bitcoin you send to this address, again, this long number, this anonymous address, I will send you double back. For, you give me 10,000, I'll give you 20. Wow. Now, you'd have to be an idiot to do it, right? Because, what? Come on. Except that all of a sudden, some other very big accounts start tweeting similar things. The number one account on Twitter is Barack Obama, 120 million followers. His account tweets it. Joe Biden's account tweets it. Elon Musk tweets it. Wow, some big names here. Bill Gates, Apple Computer. Apple tweets it. Apple's got a lot of money. Because we really appreciate our community, we'd like to give back. Tweet us, send us a Bitcoin, we'll send you two. Up to, and some people said, like, up to, Bill Gates said, up to $50 million. Except it's not Bill Gates or Apple or Joe Biden or Barack Obama. It's not all of these. About 30 high-profile verified accounts had been hacked, obviously. Of course. Right? Most people would get that. Apparently, it's hard to tell with Bitcoin, but you can look at an address and see how much money is coming. And it was around $100,000 came in. But it's hard to tell because you can't tell the source. So it could be the hacker himself putting money in from another account to make it look like it. You just don't know. So it wasn't a huge score. How did this happen? Everybody's freaking out. Now, it's pretty obvious immediately to anybody who understands how this stuff works that this was a serious hack, because in the past we've seen account takeovers, onesie twosies. I think Elon Musk's account has been hacked. Other people's accounts have been hacked. You guess the password or, things happen. But not this many, and not this many high-profile accounts that are in all likelihood highly protected with real security behind them, like multi-factor authentication, right? If you're a presidential candidate, for instance, like Joe Biden, probably using the strongest security available, right? Almost certainly. So it couldn't be that the password was guessed or was weak or was, monkey 123 and everybody guessed. It couldn't be that. So it was immediately apparent something major and much more serious was going on. Something like and we'd seen this once before, or actually several times before, maybe a malicious insider at Twitter, an employee perhaps. Ooh, that would be bad. There was a contractor about 3 years ago who, on leaving the company, disabled President Trump's account for about a minute. I mean, they caught on pretty quick. Twitter reacted quickly, shutting down all verified accounts. What we call a brute force protect, they just said, no, whatever, we don't know what's going on, so we're just going to. And as time has gone by over the last few days, we've kind of learned more and more. Twitter has not been completely forthcoming, but others have. So there's a group of people out there who trade in short Twitter handles, what they call OG, original gangster Twitter handles, usually single letter Twitter handles, like @6. There is such one. It was hacked. In fact, it's really bad. I'm glad I didn't, when I signed up for Twitter in the very earliest days, say I want @Leo, because I would be a target. I didn't use that. I used @LeoLaporte. But thank goodness, because I would have been a target. Anybody with a really short name, and I have friends who have really short names, they're at risk, because there's a whole group of people who collect these, who trade them, and you can sell them for lots of money. These people were watching what was going on. And were, in fact, probably connected to the hack. They've actually been in touch, believe it or not, with the New York Times. And they've showed them screenshots and stuff. And they said, yeah, we know what went on. We know what went on. And it's a guy named Kirk. Probably not his real name. Although it's a great, it sounds like a real name, Kirk. A guy named Kirk, who, and Kirk is not talking to the New York Times, but the people around him are, who probably, and Twitter admits this, socially engineered, tricked a Twitter employee. Now, as we look at it, it actually looks like it might be something even more sinister, that somebody got into Twitter's Slack channel. Again, another definition here. Slack is a messaging platform, like WhatsApp or Apple Messages or, you know, your text messages. But it's one that a lot of companies use. My company uses it for business chat. Apparently, Twitter did a very stupid thing. They put credentials for logging in to their admin dashboard. This is, you know, what they call God mode. The ability to log into this system, you could change things, you could tweet on people's behalves, you could change passwords. This is a powerful tool that should be not available to contractors, not available to low-level employees, should only be available to the most trusted employees. Apparently, according to Brian Krebs and other security researchers and these hacker groups that were communicating with the New York Times, they didn't secure this Slack channel, and the credentials got out. And Kirk, who is not well-known in hacker channels, apparently got access to the admin. This makes sense, the admin dashboard, because how else would somebody do this so quickly to so many much more secured accounts? It's also extremely disturbing. Fortunately, all Kirk did is put up some dopey spam, at least as far as we know, and this is part of the problem. As far as we know, it's some dopey spam that said, send me money, effectively. Yeah, nobody fell for that. Very few did. But what else could he have done? He could have tweeted out as President Trump, probably. We don't know what protections, extra protections there are. There probably are some on his account. Or other world leaders' accounts saying, you know, the countdown has begun, nuclear war starts in 5 minutes. That would be disturbing. I don't know if it would have a long-term impact. They could also, and it's apparently the case, download all previous tweets and even direct messages, private stuff. Nobody in with any brains uses Twitter's private messaging for anything important or secure. And if you have been, stop, because apparently some of that was downloaded. And it, by the way, wouldn't just be verified accounts, high profile, it'd be any account. So we don't really know. Twitter's trying to figure it out right now. And they have logs and stuff. They may actually be able to figure out what happened. We don't know how much was stolen. It could be that this Bitcoin scam was just a misdirection. Pay no attention to what I'm really doing. We don't know. So this is a significant issue in many ways. Twitter's fixed it. I'm not a huge Twitter person. I've been using it since day one, and I have about 500,000 followers. But it concerns me and everybody who uses Twitter, and it should, because Twitter's security has been lax and is still apparently lax enough that somebody could wander in and do this and tweet on Joe Biden's account and Barack Obama's account. That's a significant problem. Even more significant because the president uses this as his bully pulpit, there's some real concern about that. And other world leaders do that. There's some real concern about that. Twitter will try to fix this. I think that it's very clear you should not, and no one should use Twitter for anything important ever again. It didn't matter if you did the most secure thing possible, as I do. I use a physical key to protect my Twitter account. Wouldn't matter if they had access to this admin dashboard. That's God mode. It's pretty godlike. I am torn. I immediately turned my account into a private account so nobody could see my tweets. But, you know, honestly, that wouldn't matter if they got in because they could turn it back on again. I think it's the wise thing to do would be just stop using Twitter. My team won't let me. They say 500,000 followers, you can't. It's too valuable. Maybe I should have an auction. You can't do that, Leo. I am increasingly dismayed by social media in general. You know, it's just a mess. This is just one more way that social media is making a mess of things. It's an interesting story. And if it is true that they all this guy did, Kirk did, is get into the Slack channel, that's terrible. That's like, really? You posted the God mode credentials in a Slack channel? Really? That's what you did? That doesn't seem too smart. Doesn't seem like a good idea. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number if you want to talk. I'd love to talk tech with you. We can do that right now. Phone lines are open. Kim's here. She's answering the phone. We can talk about that or anything on your mind. Usually people want to mostly talk about stuff that makes a difference to them. And that was my initial point. Twitter isn't that big a deal for normal people. Thank goodness. Although it's a little scary that the leader of the free world is using Twitter to announce things. That's a little scary. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the unbreakable Kimmy Schaffer. Kimmy, don't take no Schaffer. Hello, Kimmy.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Very well.
Good.
Is that an inflatable slide you have to your right? What is that? I've been watching too much Below Decks.
My sweatshirt?
Oh, okay. Rats. I was getting all excited. I thought maybe you'd added a slide to our studio.
It looks so fun, but the amount of time they have to spend
know,
to get
that
funny?
Damn
thing. Yeah.
So Kim and I are devotees of the worst reality
so
show
bad.
Ever on Bravo. It's called Below Deck. And but it's great escapism during quarantine because we can sail the Caribbean or Spain, the Mediterranean with crazy people on a yacht.
Crazy, rich, obnoxious people.
It's so much fun. Yeah, so much fun. And the crew is always complaining that they want the inflatable slide off the yacht.
Yeah. Because it's a pain in the butt.
It takes an hour to set up and an hour to break down.
At least.
And what happens is the guests go on at once. Go, that was fun.
Yeah.
What's for lunch?
Yep.
Yeah. You've been out there in the Caribbean or the Mediterranean getting some sun. You look good.
I wish.
Tanned,
more like
rested,
the pool, but
ready to go.
Yeah.
Well, I know we got some phone calls.
We do.
Also coming up, Scott Wilkinson in just a little bit. We're going to talk home theater. Keep those phones heated up. I see all the lines are full. We got Mark and David and Todd and Sandy. And go ahead and get line
Reminds
five.
Reminds me of Miss Nancy.
I see Todd and I see Mark and I see David and I see Captain Sandy. We will be going to the calls.
Yes, Mark. Mark and Tustin is looking for some gimbals. He's the photographer.
Gimbals. All right. Mark, you'll be first. But first, Scott Wilkinson. Coming up, he's our home theater guru, and that's right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I know what is hip. This cat right here, his Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru. Scott is a contributor at techhive.com, joins us every week at this time to talk about audio and video. Hello, Scott.
Hey, Leo.
How are Karen in the chat room says my grandmother loves this song. we're getting old, Scott. We're getting old. I tell you. That's Tower of Power, right? What is hip?
Tower of Power. What is hip, man? One of my favorite songs. I used to play Tower of Power in bands in college. And Chicago and Blood, Sweat, and Tears, all those horn bands. Of course, I'm a horn player, right? So we used to play that music, and it's important to me, man.
Yeah. Yeah, but
my grandmother loves this song.
Well, we're getting on. We're getting on. What can I say?
Yeah,
what can I say?
How did that happen? I don't know.
So you want to talk today about something that is one of the most popular subjects we cover on the Tech Guy Show, which is
sound bars.
Why do people like sound bars?
Well, because I think they are easier to set up than a full speaker system, and they give you much better sound than a TV's own internal speakers. Right. I there's maybe one television that I know of, the Sony OLED, that has a decent internal speaker. And the reason for that is that the entire screen is the speaker.
That'll do it. That'll do it.
Actuators, vibrators behind the screen, and the entire screen sends out sound, and it sounds pretty darn good.
But how much do you pay for that? I mean,
well, those you know, Sony OLEDs are expensive.
Yeah,
you know, most people won't have them. They'll have LCD TVs, and the speakers in those, they try to make those TVs thinner and thinner and thinner, and therefore the speakers inside have to be smaller and smaller and smaller, and they start sounding like, you know what?
Honestly, I really think that the speakers in TVs these days are just pro forma. They're just there so you know that you're getting sound. They're terrible. They don't expect anybody to listen to those speakers.
They're terrible. And so what do you do? Well, you can buy an entire speaker system with an AV receiver and a bunch of speakers, and that's a pain in the butt to set up and pretty expensive, can be. But there's an alternative, and that's the sound bar, which is a long, thin speaker, one cabinet that has several drivers in it. So you get stereo sound.
It looks like a single unit, but it's got multiple. See, I call them speakers inside, like the little cones, the little things.
Little cones,
it's got multiple
little domes,
ones of those.
Yeah. The woofers and the tweeters.
Yeah. You call them drivers, just so people understand what a drive.
Yeah, I call them drivers. Yeah. I call a speaker an entire cabinet with these things in them,
right?
And if you want to call them speakers, that's fine. It's a matter of nomenclature.
Want people to understand what you're getting. You're getting them one enclosure with a lot of little speakers in them.
A lot of little speakers in it, right? Exactly. And you set that down under the TV. You plug the TV's optical audio output, which is, it's like a fiber optic cable. You plug it into the TV's output and you plug it into the soundbar's input. Some soundbars have HDMI in, so you put your source device like a Blu-ray player or a streamer or satellite receiver, something like that, by HDMI into the soundbar, and then HDMI out goes to the TV, and you get the video to the TV and the soundbar recreates the sound.
Is there a better way? Is one of those methods preferred? I always use the optical out. If
the optical is the easiest to deal with in most cases.
So the HDMI goes into the TV, and then the TV will feed the soundbar.
Correct. And that way, the TV can be used as a switcher, because most TVs have more than one HDMI input.
Right.
So you can plug in a game console, your satellite receiver, and a streamer, say an Apple TV or a Roku or something. And then you select which one you want to watch with the TV remote. And whichever one you select, the audio from that goes out the optical output of the TV into the soundbar, and you hear it. And the soundbar provides far better sound quality.
Oh, yeah. Even a bad soundbar is going to be
even
better.
Even a bad soundbar is better than most TVs.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I reviewed this soundbar. This is a kind of an interesting soundbar from a company called Dali, D-A-L-I, which stands for Danish Audiophile Loudspeaker Industries. And they've been around a long time, and they make some great speakers. This one, and they also use a Danish design. I mean, you've heard of Scandinavian design. This is a classic Danish design company. And so they use Danish design. They have very high quality speaker drivers within this cabinet. But it's kind of interesting in a couple of ways. One is it's very thin, and yet it's got, I think, 10 drivers in it that can't move very far, but they move farther than you think because of the way they're designed. It's kind of a special design. More interestingly, some of those drivers point backwards, and some of them point forwards. The whole thing is designed to actually be mounted on the wall most times you have a speaker, you want it to kind of be a little away from the wall because a wall will reinforce the bass. But this thing's designed to do that. You put it up against the wall and it really reinforces the bass and gives you a really nice sound. The unfortunate part is if you put it away from a wall, if it's freestanding out in the middle of the room, there's no bass at all almost. It's very wimpy sounding. So you really have to put it up against a wall. The other problem with it is it's very tall. It's 6.5 inches tall. So you need most sound bars are a couple inches tall. So
Six and a half inches. Wow. It's big. Yeah.
It's so big.
You couldn't put it in front of your TV. It might block the screen.
It would, in fact, block the screen.
Yeah.
In most cases. Exactly right.
So you have to raise the TV up a little bit.
Exactly. Or you have to have some wall space below.
Can you put a shelf over your TV and put a sound bar up above the TV? That would work.
Yeah. That would also work.
Would it work better, I wonder? I always put my center channel on a shelf above the TV for some reason.
Yeah, and that's fine. Mine is too.
Get it out of the way, I guess.
Yeah, it gets it out of the way. It's, you know, the sound is directional in the mid and high frequencies. So, but it's not so directional that you go, oh, wait a second, that's coming from above.
Yeah, ideally you do what Sony did and you have the speaker where the person is speaking.
Exactly.
That's what they do in movie theaters. Yeah. They perforate the screen a little bit, right?
Right. And they put the speaker behind the screen.
Yeah.
And the sound comes directly, exactly from where the actors are.
So it looks like Tom Hanks is, the sound's coming out of his mouth.
Exactly.
Instead of out of his ear or the top of his head.
With TVs, except for these Sony, except for these Sony TVs, the sound has to come from either above or below.
Right. But I've never had a problem with having a center channel there. And I have a couple of sound bars. I have a fancy Bose sound bar in one of the TVs that has its own wireless subwoofer. And I have a couple of the Sonos sound bars, the old one and one of the newer ones. The new one is nice because it's a platform, so you put the TV on the platform.
Ah, that's called a sound base.
Yeah.
And it's a great idea.
Yeah.
It's a great idea. And Zvox did this. A few companies are doing
it. I'm suspecting they use some of that extra space for porting the bass through.
And it probably has a great bass.
Yeah, it's better bass that way. Sound. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, this Dolly soundbar.
How much, out of curiosity, you said?
$1,000.
But it's all you need, right? It replaces.
It is. It does have a subwoofer output. If you wanted to add a sub to it, you could.
How about the surround? Do you get good surround with a soundbar?
You can.
Yeah.
So a lot of soundbars try to simulate that.
Computer
simulating off the wall or DSP. Or some Vizio soundbars actually come with surround speakers.
Right. We had
and
those for a while.
That's the best way.
Those are the Atmos ones, yeah. Scott Wilkinson, you can find him at techhive.com. And, of course, each week right here on the Tech Guy Show. All right, we're ready. We're going to go to the phones and talk to you right after this. It's a long sustain.
Song.
So I did not buy the Bose. Lisa bought the Bose. People are saying, I'm surprised you'd buy Bose.
No, this was years ago.
This might have been 10 years ago. But it was wireless, and it also had a base unit that was the HDMI switcher. But I think it was like $2,500. It was expensive.
Yeah, that's expensive.
Yeah. But it sounds fine. I mean, the main TVs both have... My office TV, which is an OLED, and the TV in the living room, which is that big projection, both have real AV amps and real 5.1.
And real speakers, 5.1 or whatever,
Those
but a soundbar is great for a secondary TV.
Yeah, so there's a soundbar in the gym, and there's a soundbar in Michael's game room. That's the Bose. And then we have the Sonos, the new Sonos in our bedroom. We have too many TVs, Scott. I'm very proud of the fact no TVs in any bathroom, however.
Ah, well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Just the gym, the living room, the game room, and the bedroom, and the office.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, when we moved into this house almost 22 years ago, we designated the living room as a no TV zone.
Oh, that's smart.
And
we always made the bedroom a no TV zone. Because we didn't want to lie in bed and watch TV. And we still can't. We have a little sitting area where there's a TV. And most of we did that so we can get out of the way of the kids. When there's five teenage boys visiting, we just thought, we'll let them have all of the house. We'll lock ourselves in the bedroom. So we needed a TV in there.
Well, we have TVs in a couple of the bedrooms, and certainly the theater has the OLED, big OLED. So, you know, if we want to watch TV, we'll go there. But, you know, my wife sees voice clients in the living room is another reason to have it TV-free.
It's good to have a TV-free zone. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. There's a whole period of time where I don't know anything about the sitcoms, and I realize that's the period of time when the kids were like from 4 to 8 or 4 to 10 where we didn't have a TV. Because we didn't want them watching too much TV.
Well, that's good.
And then, so I missed a whole generation
of American
sitcoms.
Sitcoms.
Didn't miss anything, as it turns out. But every once in a while, the conversation goes to things that I go, I don't know, Matt, about you. Don't know that. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't really watch that one either.
No.
Oh, Chumley says, optical is digital. I like copper wires. Yeah, well, digital can be sent along copper.
HDMI is digital as well.
That's correct, and it's copper.
It's exactly the same bits.
Yep, yep. And in fact, I like optical because there's no chance of any electrical interference.
Right, just light.
But digital, it's not too much of a problem anyway, but with optical, it's absolutely no problem.
Right.
There can be no problem. So right. I like optical, actually. I like it a lot. Depending on the quality of the optical cable, you got to treat optical cables a little delicately, more so than copper. Because if you bend them, except with really expensive ones, if you bend them to a sharp angle, they might actually break, and then no signal gets through.
Yeah, used to have a sponsor, Corning, that did optical
Corning,
cables.
Yeah.
You could tie in a knot, you could crimp and all that stuff. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. Exactly. Cool. Yeah. So a company that does that, or Fiber out of Japan, FIBBR, you know, they've demonstrated, you know, you can put a 180-degree crimp in the cable and it still works fine. User 5354 says, clip speakers fed from optical output on the TV sound great. Yeah, I'm sure that's true. I've got a pair of Klipsch bookshelves that I'm about to start reviewing probably within a month, I'd say, that I'm looking forward to that. I do like Klipsch products.
So stick around for the top.
You betcha.
Thank you, sir. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Finally. I get to talk to you. Let's say hello first to Mark. He's in Tustin, California. Our first call of the day. Hi, Mark.
Hey, so are you claustrophobic? If I have to take your picture again with 100-some people, I can put you in a plexiglass box with the Danger Will Robinson arm.
You know, I don't think we're going to be in a room with 100-some people for a while.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking about that, though, because I love solving problems. Like, how would I do this? Even if it's not...
Why would you put me in a place? Oh, you're saying for safety, have a plexiglass shield between me and the outside world.
Yeah, an oxygen mask.
I feel bad, though, for all the people who are not in the plexiglass box.
Well, you know, keep 6 feet distance, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I don't think we're having any live events for another maybe a year thereabouts, something like that. I don't know. It's unknown, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Is it hard for you as a photographer? Because, I don't know, what kind of pictures do you like to take?
No, this is the bad thing. I don't take a lot of pictures.
Oh, okay.
My kids didn't like them. And every camera you recommended, and no offense, but I mean, I've been asking you camera recommendations for years, but they would break. And it's not you, it's just our luck.
Yeah, bad luck, because I am pretty tough on my cameras. I haven't broken one yet.
No, I know. It's just, I mean, I tried to take pictures when the kids were born, broke. When the kids were christened, broke. So it was just after a while. And the kids, my daughter, we were on a cruise ship, one-way glass. And right as we were going to take the picture, she turned around. I mean, it's like a savant of not having your picture taken.
Yeah, my kids were like that, too. In fact, it's funny because I love these, by the way. Highly recommend. I have a photo frame. The one I use is the Google Nest Hub Max. So it does all the Google stuff and it ties into the Nest cameras and all that stuff. But when it's not doing anything else, it's just doing a slideshow. And I have 20 years of pictures on Google Photos. So it's going through them. And I can, you know, there's a period of time where every picture of my kid is scowling, putting their hand up, saying, no pictures. I have a picture of my son at his high school graduation dinner. Just the meanest scowl. And it's one of my favorite pictures because... but yeah, I can understand that. If you're a photo bug, pretty soon your family says, okay, put the camera down, please.
Yeah, what I do is I take pictures for other people. Like when I'm at Disneyland, I know my family.
Yeah, that's fun. Yeah.
Say, hey, do you want your, the whole family gets their picture taken.
Yeah. Isn't that fun?
Anyhow, yeah. Yeah, it is.
That's what you did for us at our event in Boston.
Yes.
So, yeah.
That's the kind of photography I like.
Yeah, you're a nice guy that way.
Yeah. I want to just, like, I love going to Laughlin, so I do the river walk. And I go walking by my friend's house in Flagstaff and all the trails and go down the river with a jet ski. What I want to be able to do is take video of that so when I'm on my trampoline at home or whatever, I can just turn on the TV and just
pretend
myself walking in places.
You're jet skiing. So you want one of those gimbal devices that smooths out the bumps. Because when you're walking or running or riding a bicycle, it can jounce the camera around so much. Now, many modern cameras have built-in optical image stabilization, including most high-end phones. But a gimbal goes a step further. It's really kind of remarkable. It uses essentially gyroscopes to keep the... And this goes back to the invention of the Steadicam in filmmaking, where a guy would wear a big rig. I don't know if you've ever seen a Steadicam operator, but he's in a harness with weights and gyroscopes and all sorts of stuff, balances. The camera's in there, and it's an amazing shot. Steadicam shots are used in movies and TV all the time because it's a stabilized shot. So because of the iPhone, and you can really thank the iPhone for this, starting in 2007, these parts got smaller and smaller, accelerometers and so forth, simpler and easier to make and lower cost. One of the first byproducts was quadcopters, which also have stabilization, right? And now the same people who make quadcopters like DJI often make gimbals. In fact, my favorite gimbals are from DJI. And depending on your price, DJI makes a little Osmo Mini, which has a built-in camera. So it's tiny. You can carry that around. It's, you know, phone quality, but because of the stabilization, it's quite amazing. So, and now they've come up with some also bigger devices. So the Osmo Mini. Now they have, I guess, the newer devices are the Ronin and the Zen Muse. This company essentially took what they learned from stabilizing quadcopters and built this into very high-quality gimbals. So it's really a budget thing. You can effectively have a Steadicam set up if you want with their Ronins. Or you can have a simple, and I have, this was the original Osmo, OSMO. I don't think they sell them anymore. I think they now have changed the names. But the original Osmo was just like a stick that you attach the camera to. The problem with, and you can get no-name brands from Amazon. They're all Chinese-made anyway. The problem with some is they're hard to balance. So the earlier gimbals, you spend a lot of time, you'd put the camera in, and you'd go through the software, and you spend a lot of time balancing it. Because remember, the camera, if you change lenses and stuff, you know, it's going to change its center of balance, center of gravity, and it's going to become, the gimbal has to be adjusted. It's a big pain in the butt, to be perfectly frank. So I think it's going to depend on your budget, how much you want to do, what kind of camera you want to use. It's less expensive to get a gimbal for a smartphone because, you know, that doesn't change, not adding lenses, or to use the Osmo Mini, which has a built-in camera. If you have a DSLR, you know, a big camera that you want to mount in the gimbal, you prepare yourself because there's quite a bit of, finicky tweaking. It's gotten better over the years, but it's still a little finicky. So it just depends. But they do a great job. You're getting pretty good image stabilization now in high-end smartphones like the Pixel 4 and the iPhone 11. Good enough so that you could walk down a road and get a pretty steady video. But if you want even better, then that's the way to go, is with a kind of a gimbal. The Ronin is quite amazing. There's one more thing that's kind of interesting. Is it Canon? Both Canon, I think, and Sony now are making cameras for vloggers. That's video bloggers. And I think the Sony has a kind of a gimbal built into it. It's let me just see the see if I can find the model number for this. Yeah, the ZV-1. It's not particularly expensive. It has a handle on it, and it's really designed to give you, it's not a complete gimbal, but it's designed to give you some better image stabilization. They call it their shooting grip. I guess it's not a gimbal. It looks like a little gimbal, but I think it helps with the stabilization, and the camera itself is pretty good. So they're designing this stuff built into the cameras with, they call it OIS, optical image stabilization. You know, so it's up to you. Budget, complexity. I love the idea of being able to just pull it out and shoot, and that's why the Osmo Mini is pretty cool. Have you played with any of these at all?
No, no, I haven't. But it's, I just want it light. That last one, the Osmo Mini, that just
Pocket, I guess, is what it's called. Yeah, the Osmo Pocket. You can take a look at that. It does a really good job. And if you go to their website, you'll see how it works. It's not a giant sensor. It's one half inch sensor, f/2 aperture. But it's designed, it's built into the gimbal, and so that saves you money and complexity. You don't ever have to balance it or anything like that. You could pull it out of a backpack and be ready to shoot.
So I'm going to be watching it while bouncing up and down on a trampoline or running on it, or walking on it. You know what I mean?
Well, you're going to be bouncing. There's no optical image stabilization for somebody in a trampoline. We haven't figured out yet. That would be interesting. It would be watching you and completely doable, I might say. Completely doable. That could be watching you and balancing you. There's no one recommendation. I've used a lot of these. I think they're great products. Highly recommend them. And I have used the Osmo Mini, and I like it a lot. Hey, thanks for the call. It's great to talk to you again, Mark. I appreciate it. All yours, my friend. Go to it.
Thank you very much. Hey, everybody. So nice to see you all. Florida man in the chat room has something surprising. I bought those One More headphones, that I recommended a week or two ago. Love the music, but the cell phone quality on Bluetooth is not that good. And that's what you raved about. I assume you mean the dual driver ANC Pro. That's the official model designator. And I'm shocked, I tell you, really, actually, not being sarcastic. If the sound phone quality isn't good, because I think it's fantastic. He says the music is good, which it is. I wonder, did you try it with the active noise canceling on and off? Because that might affect the phone quality. It's possible. And it has three settings, ANC off, ANC on, and ANC environment, or I forget exactly what they call it, that lets outer sounds, environmental sounds in with ANC off. And you might try each of those three settings. As I recall, and it's now been a few weeks, I mostly use the phone with ANC off, because that's how I generally prefer to listen to music on it. Because with ANC on, the bass is greatly emphasized, and it's a little too much for me, even though I'm a bass head, but it's still a little too much for me in terms of balance. So I generally listen to those with ANC off. And when I was doing phone calls with it, when I do phone calls with it, the ANC is off and the sound quality is great for me. What I'm hearing from the other end of the phone call. And when I did a test with my wife, she said my voice sounded great too on it. So I would suggest trying ANC on and off, maybe even the environmental mode, the third mode of ANC, and see what happens. So nice to see you, Loquacious, as always. And my sister, as I said, is in the chat room, so say hi to Scott's sis. In fact, Scott, she's waving back to Loquacious. Very good. Let's see. Let's see. Florida man says, actually, the music is unreal, worth it for just that alone. Yes, tried both wind and active noise on and off. Wind on or off, okay. Okay. Yeah, I have to say, that was probably the most impressive thing about that particular headphone for me was the quality of the phone. Scooter X says maybe disconnect and delete the and repair the Bluetooth connection. That's another good advice, Scooter Florida man from Scooter X. That's true. Yes, Chumley, I have a sister. Indeed, I do. Younger than me by 3 years. Mom and dad planned it out, and it happened exactly as they expected. Tech Dino. Scott Sis, are you also musically talented? I will let you answer that, dude. By the way, we call each other dude. Have since kids, since we were kids. And so, yeah, no other siblings, Archandra, just one sister. And that's about it. Florida man, do I use Android or Apple? I have an iPhone. That's what I use. If you use Android, I don't know. Would that make a difference? I wouldn't think so. Uh-oh. Scott's Lynn calls me a rude dude. Well, she's a crude rude dude. That's all I got to say until she comes back with another one. We used to send letters back and forth when I was in college addressed to increasingly long adjective strings. So you're a crude, rude dude. And now I'm a lewd, crude, rude dude. And you're a screwed, lewd, rude, crude dude. Yes, Desert Moon, my favorite sister. My favorite sister, what's her name? That was actually a code in our family. We used to sign things. You know, your favorite son, what's his name? Because my parents only had one son. Or your favorite brother, what's his name? Let's see. Revertigo, or good name, Retro Vertigo. Okay. We have a Vizio HDTV. Are Vizio soundbars pretty good for a basic soundbar? Yes, absolutely. I really like Vizio soundbars, generally speaking. They're great value. Might not be the absolute best sounding soundbar on the market, but they really do sound good, and especially for the money. And they offer, some other companies do too, but Vizio has really pioneered this, a soundbar in the front, a wireless subwoofer, and two speakers for surround. So they're not doing this weird simulated surround, reflect off the walls, or DSP hocus pocus. They've actually got surround speakers to the sides or to the rear of you. Now that's a little more complicated to set up. But it really gives you a true surround effect. So if you can afford that, that is what I like them a lot. I really do. And I recommend them often. Uh-oh, I'm a snafu screwed, lewd, rude dude. and if you don't watch out, you'll be a nude snafu screwed, lewd, crude, rude dude. And Tech Dino, yes, what a tood, dude. Tim Elliott, there was an album, Best of What's His Name? I don't know. Let's see. Don't call me Gertrude. Very good. Beatmaster, talking about siblings, where's brother M. Heiss? Mike should be around. He's a brother from another mother. Where is I thought I saw him join the chat room. Did he join the chat room? I don't see him. what did I just call her? She got lost in chat room chat. my sister's getting a schooling on chat room. You know, we have 338 people in here now, and it goes by pretty fast. I've gotten used to it, but she's pretty new. I called you a nude, snafu'd, screwed, lewd, crude, rude dude. So your turn. Yeah, we've done this all our lives, folks. You're getting a peek into the Wilkinson family here. And that's about it.
Thanks, dude. Have a great day. I'm not starting it all over again.
No, don't start it all over again.
Not from zero. Take care.
Thanks, Leo.
Bye-bye.
See you next week.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We got smartphones. We got smart watches. We got all that jazz. Anything with a chip in it, we can talk about it. 888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If your internet seemed down or slow yesterday, there was a problem. A lot of the internet goes through a company called Cloudflare. Kind of an interesting company. Their business is essentially to provide services to websites and other internet-delivered content. The number one service I think they provide, one of the very popular ones, is protection against denial-of-service attacks. So this is an attack that used to be very common, where a jerk would attack a website by sending it a lot of bogus traffic. And there are various ways to do this. Usually, overwhelming the server is not that hard. Most servers don't have big fat pipes. So if you send a lot of bogus traffic, the server can get tied up responding to that bogus traffic and then can't respond to legitimate traffic. They go to the site and the site is either very, very, very slow or just doesn't respond at all. That's called a denial of service attack. And it's a silly attack. It's a dopey thing to do. But there still are companies that would do this denial of service as a service. So you pay them some money. They say, fine, we'll take care of it. And they bring the site down. A lot of this was maybe used to blackmail sites. If you're a bookmaking site, they would threaten to bring you down on Super Bowl Sunday so that you couldn't take any bets, that kind of thing. And then you'd have to pay them. Otherwise, you know, they would make you unavailable all day Sunday. So Cloudflare, the way they solve it is they have giant pipes. And when you start to get overwhelmed, Cloudflare says, we'll handle this. And occasionally you'll go to a site that tends to get attacked a lot and there'll be a little thing. You're going through Cloudflare. It's going to take 3 seconds, 2, 1, and now you're in, that kind of thing. All of that to mitigate these attacks. So much of the internet goes through Cloudflare that when Cloudflare goes down, that's a problem. And in fact, yesterday, they were struggling. They were really struggling. And a number of companies, including ours, that go through Cloudflare, either failed or were really slow. It was all fixed by 3 o'clock Pacific yesterday. But if sometime during the day on Friday, you kind of, wow, these sites aren't coming up. Don't blame your internet service provider. It was happening to a lot of us, and it was a kind of a weird central point of failure. You don't really want that in the world. You want the whole internet. The whole idea of the internet is that it's distributed, and if part of it goes down, you can route around it. And I mean, it was how it was designed from the beginning. But I guess centralization is a natural tendency, and Cloudflare now controls so much of the internet that when it has problems, the internet gets a cold. Just to let you know, that's what's going on. 8888-ASK-LEO. We'll go to line 2 and say hi to David in Wichita Falls, Texas. Hi, David.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
What can I do for you today?
Before my question, I want to suggest there's a music video of I've Been Everywhere by Jonathan Byrd, B-Y-R-D.
Mm-hmm.
It would be perfect for Johnny Jett.
I will find it for him. Yeah, we play the original Johnny Cash version for our travel guy who's coming up. But
now this is a quarantine version.
Yeah, we had one. I haven't been anywhere. Maybe that's this one. Yeah.
Now that sale, I've been everywhere.
I'll find it. Great, thank you.
My question though is, I was wanting to maybe start my own web page and play music on it, but then I was wondering, well, if I play music that from my collection of music that I have thousands of hours of.
Suddenly, you have to pay royalties.
And what sort of cost is that sort of thing?
Well, it's complicated. Mostly, it's complicated because you'd have to negotiate it. And they're not going to negotiate with you. So then you're going to have to go through a rights organization. And the cost will depend on how much how many listeners you have, right? And other things. So this really has kind of hurt the internet radio biz. But there are third-party internet radio station people that have pre-negotiated with ASCAP BMI, the license holders, so that you don't have to pay license fees, or you pay these companies. Live 365 used to do this. There are other companies now that do this. They're generally not free because there is a cost because you're paying license fees. I presume if it were recordings of you and your buddies, that'd be fine. But these are commercial recordings, I presume.
No, nobody will listen to that.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, if you want to play the Captain of Tennille, Nia Sedaka has to get his cut. And the way they do that is through a rights organization called ASCAP BMI. We do it. Every radio station in the world does it. Well, in the country anyway. Each country has its own rules. But so we pay ASCAP BMI license fees. And broadcasters have different fees. For a long time, there was a battle to get internet radio stations to pay as much as broadcasters pay. And as a result, over time, the cost has gotten higher. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if Live 365, which really was a great way to do this, I wonder if they're still around, though. I think they are. Yeah, they are. So I'd take a look at them. The nice thing about that is you could just set this up, use your laptop, you stream it to Live 365, and then you become part of their radio lineup, which is nice. You're going to be able to get more listeners that way because you'll show up in a directory. And B, you don't have to have a lot of equipment to do this or a lot of software running. You just need the Live 365 app, and you're good to go. So, yeah, they cover through Sound Exchange, ASCAP, BMI, and CSAC. They also cover Canada and the UK, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why it's not free.
Right. Well, in the words of Emily Littella, never mind.
Never mind. You could do it for a while, but you'll get a cease and desist letter. You might even get a bill.
Nah, I'm not going to do it. I'll just listen to music for my own pleasure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame because it's fun, isn't it? And now it's easy to literally create your own internet radio station. You just need a little software, Shoutcast or something like that. And you can stream and you can give friends the address and they can listen. And it's so cool. I guess Live 365 lets you upload 25 gigs of music for free. So there is a free tier. So I would take a look and see. Maybe that's all you need.
Well, you and your previous musical director really messed up my mind about 2.5 years ago.
Oh, yeah? Why? What did we do?
Y'all played a song, Istanbul, It's Not Constantinople.
I love that song.
And yeah. I sang that to myself every day for...
It's a earworm, we call it. Yeah, Istanbul, anyway. Not Constantinople. So we like the They Might Be Giants version, but it really goes back to the... I think it's the Four Lads who did the first version of that. Yeah, that's a really old song, and it's very catchy. I'll give you my tip for earworms. I was talking with a friend the other day. She got there's this toothbrush that Dick DeBartolo, our Gizwiz, was talking about, our gadget guy, from a company called Wowie that is for kids. It plays a game with them to get them to brush their teeth longer. And Wowie sent me one. I didn't have any kids, so I gave it to her. And she said, there's only one thing wrong with it. It plays Baby Shark over and over. Now, the kids love it, but I can't get it out of my head. If I hear Baby Shark once, I'll be singing it for the rest of the day. So I told her, and I'll tell you, the old DJ trick for getting an earworm out of your head. You need a song that has no hook, because the hook is what gets in your head. That's the catchy, memorable part of any song. And almost every song played on pop radio has a hook. There are two songs I know of that are hook-free. You start humming that in your head. It knocks the earworm out, and then it persists it has a short half-life because it has no hook. Unchained Melody by the Righteous Brothers. That's a good one. No hook. And then the one I was always told that works pretty well is Sheena Easton's Morning Train. We'll play that. I tell you, Lady Laura, if you could find that, we could play that when we come back. So anybody who's got an earworm, when we come back from the break, we will cure you magically through the radio. It's an amazing thing. Our show today brought to you by the best VPN in the world. Boy, I keep reading stories about VPNs that are doing bad things. They're logging. They're injecting ads into the stream. Not ExpressVPN. Their privacy policy is golden. It's golden. They're not keeping track of anything you're doing. That's not the case even when you use incognito mode or private browsing on your browser. Your internet service provider sees every place you go, everything you do, and that means they can sell it. It's legal. It's legal for them to sell it. Plus, law enforcement can get it without a warrant. They can just say, hey, what's Leah been doing? And the ISP goes, here. If you want some privacy, you need ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN encrypts all your traffic so that the ISP can't see what you're doing, can't tell what you're doing. It protects you against hackers. It protects you against malware. It protects you against snooping. And they really do it. They've had a third-party audit their privacy policy, but they've also audited their trusted server technology. I love this. When you spin up ExpressVPN, you can choose any of 90 countries around the world, hundreds of servers. You press that big button. iOS, Android, Mac, PC, anywhere you are, smart TVs, streaming devices. You press that big button. Now your traffic is encrypted all the way to that server. But here's what's cool. When it goes to that server, it spins up a copy of OpenVPN software, spins it up. You are now VPN'd. And then as soon as you disconnect, goes away. Can't write to disk, saves nothing. No traces left of your visit at all. You're completely private. Protect your online activity today with a VPN rated number one by CNET, by Wired, by me. It's the only one I use. ExpressVPN.com/techguy. You get an extra 3 months free with a 1-year package if you go right now to ExpressVPN.com/techguy. ExpressVPN.com/techguy. They're great. They're also so fast, you can watch HD video. I leave it on all the time because it doesn't slow me down. ExpressVPN.com/techguy. Tech guy. This is all you need is the chorus. My baby takes the morning train. I'd have to ask Scott Wilkinson, but I think musically it's so not complex that it doesn't. You need something. Somebody said, well, Gregorian chants would work. Yeah, if you could hum them in your head, I guess they would. But this song, you can remember, hum in your head. And then, see, earworm gone. It's gone. What were we talking about? Is this based on science? Somebody in the chat room says, is this based on science? No, it's not based on... I don't... No. Go ahead, Phoenix Warp 1. He says, I can get this stuck in my head. Try. I dare you. 8888 Ask Leo. Line 3, Todd in Cincinnati, Ohio. Hello, Todd.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Man, the things you learn on this show.
Well, if you're a DJ, you have to understand, and I was for many, many years, you have this problem, and you need a remedy. It is the DJ flu. You go home singing that Neil Diamond song you just played four times in one shift. Bad, bad.
Well, I'll give you some background to my tech question.
Yes.
And it is music related.
Okay.
So... my family, for many, many years, owned a coin-operated vending machine company.
Oh, cool.
And jukeboxes are involved.
Oh, my. How so cool.
Yeah. So over the years, we would rotate 45 records. I'm talking decades and decades and decades. So we've accumulated, I would guess, 50,000 45s. quite a bit.
Holy cow. And they're all just slightly worn.
Yeah, exactly. And there's multiple copies of them because we probably had 40, 50 jukeboxes out
wow.
in the city. And,
wow.
You know, whatever the hit was, it had to be everywhere. And there was a time where we would sell those on Saturday morning for three for a dollar. And
oh, cool.
And would come in. And what a good time.
Yeah.
Well, we've stopped doing that a long time ago.
Yeah, because I think the market for 45s is really dried up.
Yeah. Yeah. And once, like, touch-tune jukeboxes and things like that came out, the 45.
That's right. It's all digital now, isn't it? Right?
We kept our 45.
Yeah, it's all digital.
Yeah, 100% digital.
Yeah.
Although there are still people who like those things and collect those things and have jukeboxes and...
Oh, I bet.
You know, whatever.
I'd love a jukebox. They're so, especially the old retro ones, they're so cool. Be great to have in your man cave. Give people quarters. They can go over and play a song.
It is a sound bar in its own right. It's a sound
bar. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And you can watch the mechanism as it goes. It gets the record, puts it on the turntable, drops the arm on it. It's really cool. Yeah.
You have a lot of experience with it.
These are, you know, a big part of our history.
Yes. They are very Americana.
Yeah. Yeah, because the Fonzie would always jab it. It would play a song.
Yeah.
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 So what's your issue, besides the fact that you have a lot of 45s?
Well, we don't really know what we have, and this is not going to be a quick process no matter how we get it done. But with technology, the way that it's advanced, instead of paying Hazel minimum wage to sit there and type all these titles into a spreadsheet, I've done some investigation on OCR, optical character.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And I'm trying to find the best process, the most efficient, the quickest use of a cell phone, if possible, that would allow us to take a picture of the label, somehow pull that into a spreadsheet of sorts, as quickly and as simply as possible, that we can, over a year, by scanning really 1,000 a week, be able to pull 50,000 titles into this database. And then eventually sometime be able to sell them like we used to, but now take that online.
The nice thing is that these printed labels will probably be very easy to read for any... OCR's optical character recognition software. It's not like handwriting or faded typewriting. It's going to be nice and bold. You'll at least get the title. You might get the artist and additional information. So the first step is getting them into a digital form. And you said cell phone. Absolutely. All you need is to set up an easel, something that you can put the record on that's lit. You want the record in a fixed place, in a fixed angle, with fixed lighting, and then you need a tripod or something to hold your cell phone or camera. So you set this all up so it's static, and then you just put the record on, take a picture, take it off, put the next one on. You could do one every couple of seconds. You could go pretty fast. So that'll get it into the camera.
You want to come work for us? Pretty good.
You know, who knows what's going to happen with this radio thing? It's always For years working in radio, anytime I saw a help wanted sign on a McDonald's, I'd always make a mental note of it because I started out in life working at McDonald's. I thought, I can always go back. If I had to, I can go back. So
I've had some luck with Google Keep.
Yes, so Keep does OCR. Yes.
Easel or anything in that. I actually just held the record in my hand.
No, the only reason you do the easel and the tripod is to make it eat life for you easier so that you always have a fixed angle, well-lit, clean picture.
Okay.
But you don't have to do that. Yeah, you can do it by hand. It's just faster. If you have the easel, you could see.
How do I get it into a spreadsheet?
Well, so the problem with Google Keep, it does OCR. It does that part. It's for business cards and things, and it will turn it into text. It doesn't have a really easy way to export it. It's kind of, you know, there's Google Takeout. I don't know what format Keep it goes in Google Takeout, but probably the file you're going to get is going to include the image and the text. And then you're going to have some program that takes the text and puts it in a spreadsheet. So that's not ideal.
Do you know of any paid services? I mean, Google Keeps is totally free under that G Suite stuff. But, maybe there's a paid service, paid level as well. But I assume that there has to be doctor's offices and other solutions needed.
Oh, yeah.
Besides 45 vinyl.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of people are doing this. Hang on, because we got to take a break. But let me help you see if we can find a service. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I think the first thing is just get the images in and not worry about keep yet. Keep is nice, but it's not intended for large volume like this. What you want is something that will OCR a bunch of images. And ideally, here's how... Pardon me?
Like in Photoshop, how you can do a batch file.
Yeah, you got a hundred. You're gonna have a thousand JPEGs.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
And then you take the JPEGs and you feed it to this program, and what it does is it reads the text as best it can. You want to keep the image attached to that, because if you are going to sell them online, you'd really like to have a listing online with the picture and the OCR. So I'm gonna guess that most OCR software will do a pretty good job with this. There's Abby, which has been around for a long time, ABBYY, their fine reader. And the issue is you're going to need something that can do it not only in batch, but put it in a format that would be easy to read into your spreadsheet or whatever it is you're going to use. So...
I want to say Google Keeps it a CSV file, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, if it does, if you could take it and put it all in Keep and then output it as a CSV file, that would work fine. That would work fine.
What about a file that would also end up working well with, like, modern-day websites or even a WYSIWYG that we
could
use?
CSV, comma-separated values, is the lingua franca. Once you get it into that, you can import it into Excel. You can import it into a database. Websites of the kind you describe usually use either MySQL or MongoDB. They use one of these web design DB database programs. They will read CSV no problem.
Okay.
The issue is going to be a little bit. You're going to need to do some cleaning up, because it's going to do the best it can to put. Keep won't do a great job. It's going to give you just a blob of text that includes whatever it could understand. It's not going to say title, publisher, artist. It's not going to know that. It's not going to be able to do that.
Right. I'm not sure what identifier there would be, but usually the title was the largest, boldest print.
Yeah.
And underneath it in parentheses was oftentimes the writer and things like that. So if there was a way to be able to designate almost like headline level and body text level and things like that, then, you know, that smarts would be worthwhile paying for.
Yeah, so for that, you want something called structured OCR.
Okay.
And that's what people use, like doctor's offices will use to read forms that are always the same. This isn't going to work perfectly for you, because although there does seem to be kind of a standard among 45s, it varies.
Right.
But it'll give you at least a good start. So structured OCR, and there's actually even Amazon has something called Textract that would get it into a table and a database. That's an online service, but you could look at that and see if that does what you want it to do. That's the kind of thing you were describing that maybe a doctor's office would use to read in forms and get into a structured database.
Okay. The Amazon key. The second word was text what?
TextRact, like text merged with extract.
Okay.
So if you go to Amazon's Textract page, you can read what it will do. And it's exactly what you want to do, which is to look at a standard form and say, okay, that's the title, that's the publisher, that's the artist, that's the date, and put it as best it can into a form that you can use. And because it's Amazon, it's going to go right into a database, which you could then easily use with a... website. It's designed for medical offices and things like that. But there are probably other, you know, I don't know how much the Amazon thing is. It's usually very affordable, like the pennies a page kind of thing. They have a free tier, 1,000 pages a month. So that might even be enough for you. He's been everywhere, man. He's traveled to the mountain air, man. He's breathing all the stuff that's in there, man. He's Johnny Jet, our not traveling man. Hello, Johnny.
Hello, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. A lot of travel news this week, and I got a website and an app for you.
Wow. Well, go to it. I won't get in your way then.
No.
I always get in Johnny's way because I don't get to see you but once a week, and I think I consider you a dear friend, and I always want to know how it's going with you and the fam.
Well,
but
I still have not gotten on a plane. Every time I think about it, I get
How's your sister? I know she got the vid.
Yeah, she's doing bad. She's doing much better. She was bad, but
she got through it.
She did not have to go to the hospital. She said at one point she thought she was going to have to.
Wow. Well, I'm glad she's feeling better. And Dad's okay? Dad's in Florida.
Dad's in South Florida, which is the epicenter right now. Yeah. And
he's not going to Disney World, though, is he?
Are you kidding me?
He might go to Hialeah, but he ain't going to Disney World.
He would go to the racetrack if it was open.
Johnny, go ahead. No more family. Do your thing, man. What's the latest travel news?
Well, we talked about it a couple weeks ago that we thought the CDC was going to extend their no-sail order, and that was official this week, September 30th, for ships larger than 250 passengers. So there's no sailing, and you know what? That's going to be extended again, I'm almost positive. I can't see it happening, being allowed until probably the spring. And same thing with the Canadian-Mexican border. That was just extended this week. It's now August 20th, which I think, again, will be extended because, our cases are blowing up here. I just can't see Canada or Mexico allowing us to come in across the border. Mexico, you can fly to. So, you can go to Cancun, and there's some tourist destinations.
I keep seeing ads for Sandals Resorts. Yeah. And they act – I don't know if they bought these ads a year ago and they just can't get out of the contract or what. Are they actually running open? And it looks like there's no precautions whatsoever. They're just, hey, have a good time.
I'll have to do some research on that one. But, I would assume that they are doing precautions, especially if they're allowing Americans in. They have to because the cases are so high here. But, no matter where you are in the world, there's always these hotspots. Hong Kong just had to shut down again, and that's their third wave. And, we should be learning from these guys. And speaking of learning, by the way, and actually Europe actually just extended it this week now as well. Every 2 weeks they look at it. And it was this week where they said, okay, another 2 weeks, we're not going to allow Americans. I don't see them letting Americans in this fall.
Yeah.
Unless it drops.
Yeah.
And Delta, by the way, is the airline you want to fly if you're nervous about people not wearing masks because actually they're going to announce – they haven't even announced it yet. TPG got the exclusive on this where starting on Monday, Delta Airlines, if you try to say that you have some kind of condition, which there are some legitimate reasons why you cannot wear a mask – well, but there's also people who are taking it politically and saying that,
here's the problem with Delta – their home base is Hartsfield in Atlanta, where the governor says no one has to wear a mask.
Right.
So I don't care how good Delta's doing it. That plane's going to be stopping probably every day in Hartsfield.
Oh, without a doubt. It's their major hub.
Probably a lot of people going in and out from Hartsfield.
But if you don't want to wear a mask on Delta, you have to show up to the airport now an hour early.
And they test you?
No, you have to speak to a doctor virtually, which you'll do in private. And then so they'll then tell the gate agents, OK, this person
has no symptoms at all. So he might have it or not.
Well, they definitely could have the thing, but they're just saying whatever the reason for not wearing it, it can't be because it's their freedom.
Oh, OK.
Because that's their policy.
So you have to have a medical condition.
Exactly.
There are
some out there, but there's not a lot.
I'm staying home. I'm sorry. I'm just staying home. But go ahead. Go on, Delta. You like Delta? That sounds like that's of all the airlines, they got the best policies.
Delta's great. And they're also blocking the middle seat. They said, I don't know if it was this week or last week, they announced they're going to do it not only past September 30th, but they're most likely going to do it till early 2021. They're going to keep blocking the middle seat.
If you've got a medical condition that precludes wearing a mask, what are you doing on an airplane? What if
the
pressure should suddenly drop
to the hospital,
and the thing comes down and you can't put on the mask because it seems like you should probably not be on a plane, but okay, fine.
But there are reasons, and who knows what they are.
I understand. People have to fly. I feel bad for them if they do.
But also Iceland Air, by the way, is laid off all their flight attendants, and now they're pilots are going to be the flight attendants. So the ones that are not flying the plane are going to be the extra pilots are going to be working the minimum service because they're trying to save
all the airlines doing massive layoffs.
Big time. I mean, it's huge layoffs. And if the Congress doesn't pass this next bill, there's going to be massive layoffs October 1st. I'm talking 40% of staff. But speaking of Iceland, this is my website, by the way.
Yes.
Their tourism board always comes up with something clever, and this one is pretty clever. I tweeted it. I'll put it in the chat room. I tagged you on the tweet, by the way. So if you're frustrated, as I am, with 2020, you can go on your computer, you can scream into your computer, and then they will let it out in one of their seven locations around that, you know, because Iceland is so naturally beautiful, and they have speakers set up in these desolate places or deserted places. And, you know, it's just a way to
they actually set up a speaker and you're yelling into it.
Yep. Well, it's not live. You record it and you can listen to the other people's on their website. But on their website actually has a doctor. This is an actual treatment for people.
There's a speaker facing the ocean in Iceland in a field. The speaker says, let it out, and you can actually scream into that microphone on your computer, and it'll play it back through that speaker.
And you can listen to other ones, and you have to put in your screen name and your city and country.
It's terrible.
And allow your microphone.
Looks like you need Iceland.com. Looks like you need Iceland.com.
It's brilliant.
Wait a minute. Let me try it.
It's only good for 2 weeks.
I'm going to scream in Iceland right now. You ready?
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to do it. Oh, you got to do it faster. You got to hold it down. Let's play it back. Just see.
Then at the bottom.
It got it. Okay. And now I'm going to send my scream to Fisterfall, Reykjavík, and
have you been to Iceland?
No, I can't wait. And it wants my screen name, my city, and my country.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Okay, that's not so bad. I'm just going to say Leo.
Because I thought they wanted your email and all this stuff.
As long as they don't want my email, I don't care. Yeah.
Right.
All right.
So they're smart about this.
Oh, there's the terms and conditions I got to sign on to. That's funny. Right. That's good promotion.
It's great promotion.
Looks like you need Iceland.com.
Yeah. And actually Greenland, I think it was Greenland a few weeks ago where you could actually control a live webcam. And you could tell the person every minute someone else got to do it. You could tell you could hit the jump button and make the person would jump. Or go turn left, go right, all around the country. Actually, it wasn't Greenland. It was – I got to look. I'm totally spacing right now.
I am now sending my personal man scream to Iceland. Oh, it wants an email of it playing, though. But it's just worth it because it's going to send me an email with a recording of it playing from that speaker.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
It's going to play in 30 seconds somewhere in the wilderness of Iceland.
That's awesome.
Johnny Jeff, that's hysterical.
And then by the way, last week I told you about how I got my travel fixed with all these different travel webcams. And after you told me that you did not like the weather on there, I was like, oh my God, he's right. Now you kind of ruined it for me.
Sorry.
I'm like, the weather is bothering me. It's just too big.
Yeah.
But it is cool at first. And then the other
thing. We're out of time, Johnny Jet, but you are. I told you. I shouldn't have asked about your dad. It's my fault. I love you, Johnny. Stay safe. JohnnyJet.com. I'm going to scream in Iceland. It's going to play back in Fisterfall, Reykjanes, Iceland. That's hysterical. That is the best site you've ever said.
Wow, I almost did not do it. I actually just created that post this morning for you.
I love that.
Because I was like, you know what? I think he might like it, but you just never know.
You never know with Leo. He's so unpredictable. Well, I'm gonna wait for my email back.
I'm gonna
my
put that in the chat
thing.
Room. Right
so I guess
now.
They have a microphone next to the speaker.
But you got to go to Iceland sometime.
I will go to Iceland sometime. I sure will.
I mean, you missed this time because the airfares were so cheap when they had wow.
And there's no coronavirus there, right?
Well, there's not yet, or there's you know
they've
been very.
I think they've
They've been very strict. Job. They keep pushing it back for Americans. You have to be, tested.
I couldn't get in there if I wanted to, right?
Not right now.
Yeah.
But it's going to be soon because they're going to make you test.
I'm not going anywhere.
Listen, I want to get on a plane. I'm jonesing. And actually, I've been looking. If the cases were not so high here in Florida, I would have jumped on it. There's a 777 to Miami.
Yeah, you got
to
see your
dad. Business class is wide open, and I get free upgrades because I've flown American so much.
So you'd be very safe, really.
I would think so.
Yeah,
but it's just not worth it. I can't go expose my dad, and then I definitely don't want to expose my kids.
Well, that's right. That's the problem. Because what are you going to bring home? My son went to Tahoe on the 4th of July, and the whole group got sick. He didn't get it. Then his friend
they all got COVID.
Mac got COVID. Henry got tested and was negative. He's going to get tested again on Monday. I guess it's easy to get tests fast in San Francisco. So he's so far negative, knocking on wood. But I said, Henry, you can't come over until, you know, for 2 weeks.
Right.
So, but even when he comes over, I wear my mask and my visor and I sit 6 feet away and we stay outside and all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that would be the most difficult thing is not being able to hug my dad.
I thank God I can FaceTime. I FaceTime my mom and I told her, I'm sorry I can't come visit you. She said, this is fine. This is great. It's easy for her because she can take a nap and, you know, it's not like she has to entertain me or anything. So it works out fine. And she's staying safe. She's 87.
We're so fortunate with FaceTime.
FaceTime, thank God, fortunate. Right?
It's incredible, and it's free. I mean, it blows my mind. It blows my dad's mind. Every day, he's like, "I'm so lucky to be able to do this," because he sits in his room, and I try to FaceTime him 4 times a day, so he can see the kids.
You FaceTime him all the time. Good for you.
At least 4 times a day.
Good for you. I think that's pretty darn close to the real thing, because you wouldn't be able to hug him anyway. So you're going to be – how is it any different than a 6-foot social distance meeting? I think it's better. You don't have to wear masks.
Well, it's true, and he can't hear very well. So if I was 6 feet away, it would be even more difficult.
You can crank it up. My mom wears her hearing aids connected to the iPad so she can hear.
Right.
I feel like, that's a lifesaver. I do my Pilates classes 3 times a week. My trainer FaceTimes me, and I put her on the iPad on a chair, and she watches me and tells me what to do. It's great.
Wow,
it's great. Honestly, this is how it's going to be for the rest of my life.
It could be like this for a long time, and there are some things that I love about it, especially.
Well, the lack of travel, both you and me both. That's the biggest problem.
For sure.
Because Lisa and I will look at our pictures and go, I wish I were. This is the time we would be traveling. So we've got our photo frame is showing a lot of pictures of our visits to various countries. And it's so sad. Johnny, I love you. Stay safe.
Take care, buddy. Thank you.
And I'll see you next week.
All right. Take care.
Well, I'm not going to Paradise City, but I might be going to Reykjanes, Iceland. Screaming. I'm waiting for my email back. Looks like you need Iceland.com. Our travel guru, Johnny Jett, has a great website. I highly recommend JohnnyJett.com. That's where you'll find the link to the Icelandic Scream Fest and a lot of other great stuff. Everything he mentions on this show, plus stuff I never let him have time to mention. And he also has a great podcast that's there at the website, JohnnyJett.com/podcast, or watch his YouTube channel. 39 questions to some of the best travel people in the world. If you can't travel, at least you can Johnny Jett. I was really hoping my... So I you heard me scream. It was recorded on the website. Looks like you need Iceland.com. And they promised to play it back. I gave them my email address. You don't have to, but I gave them my email address so that they could mail me back a recording of my scream being played to the deserted beaches of Iceland. Wow. I was hoping I would get that back. But, you know, I'm sure there's a backlog, especially because we just told everybody about it. There's probably now a line to scream in Iceland. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Line 4. That's Sandy in Long Beach, California. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, Leo. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I have a question about domain names. Actually, two questions if you have the time.
Sure, sure.
Okay, the first one is this. After I buy a domain name, what things should I look out for? For example, if I buy a domain name from a company that later goes bankrupt, will my domain name be up for grabs?
No.
Okay.
So where did you buy the domain name, or have you not bought it yet?
Not yet.
Okay. Doesn't matter. All the domain name registrars, and that includes GoDaddy, the biggest, but Google does it too, domains. We have a sponsor, Hover, that does it. There are lots of companies that do this. All of them do it. They're registrars licensed by something called ICANN, the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. That's the boss. And once you register a domain name, I register them at Hover. So once I register it at Hover, they send that information to ICANN. And so if Hover, even if Hover disappears or goes out of business, ICANN has that registration. Now, if Hover goes out of business, they're going to have to hand over that information to another registrar. Or else, if they just disappeared, ICANN would take it and hand it to another registrar, because ICANN doesn't have any public-facing interface. So you'll be transferred to another domain registrar. But you're always going to get access. The key is that you buy it and you don't let somebody buy it for you. Very often happens, somebody, you want a website and you hire a consultant to do it. Almost always that consultant, and this is sneaky, will buy the domain name. It'll be in their name. They'll own it. And that keeps you from ever leaving them. In effect, they keep the keys to the car. So you, even if you're using a consultant, you say, no, I'll get the domain name. I want to own it in my name. And you get it. And then you can give them access to it, though. So don't worry about that. What else did you worry about?
Okay, good. Thank you. Second question, is it more efficient to use one company, and by that I mean a web hosting service, to register a domain name and host it on the internet?
Well, that's a good, excellent question, and it relates to the other one. I like to separate them. So you go to GoDaddy, register a domain name. Among the many checkboxes they're going to feed you is, would you like us to host it? That's fine. That's okay. The key is to have separate control of the website and the domain so that you can move the website to any hosting company anytime you want, but it'll still have the same address. You don't want to have to send out a change of address form. So I've got many, many domains, but my website, for instance, leo.fm, that's a website I have. I can host that anywhere I want, but the address will never change. I control the domain registry, and I can change what web host it points to. So you don't have to separate them as long as you own the domain name. That's the key.
I got it. Okay. Well, thank you, Leo. I have more homework to do now.
Yeah. In fact, I want to do a podcast. I do an Ask the Tech Guy podcast where we take one question. Actually, today I'm going to be doing one on how to get a custom email address. But a lot of this will apply to how to get a custom domain name of any kind for a website as well. And there are, some pretty straightforward steps. I think it's the best way to do your email, because that way you have one address for the rest of your life. And it's usually something like yourlastname.com, something like that. And that way, people, it's easy to remember. And you can change hosts. If Gmail, you don't like Gmail, you can use Yahoo Mail. Get tired of Yahoo Mail, you can use another one. You can move around, but your email address never changes. I think it's a really, the first thing anybody should do. If a baby is born, when my kids were born, I got their names. I got abbylaporte.com and henrylaporte.com, both for email and for websites, so that they will always own that, right? So that's a good thing to do. You want to have I think, more professional, if you've got a company, to have a company name for your email, things like that. All of that, that's how you do it. You register a domain name. The real key always comes back to what I told you at first, which is own it yourself. Have it in your name so that no one else has control of it. That's the most important thing. My pleasure. It's good to talk to you. It's a great question, Sandy. And it's something I think a lot of, it's not as hard as it sounds. It sounds kind of, oh my gosh, that's going to be techie or weird. But no, it's not. You know, it's totally doable. It's not that complicated. I think you can do it. And it sure is nice to have that control. Dr. Mom is on the line from San Diego. Hi, Dr. Mom.
Hey, Leo.
You had overheating earbuds? That's not good.
Okay, this was an email that Amazon sent out to everybody who had bought an earbud 3 days ago. And they're claiming, people are reporting that the earbuds, you leave them in the case to charge, they're starting to overheat. So,
oh, at least it's not overheating in your ear.
No. They've identified an issue, and they pushed a software update to everybody. But the directions are a little bit funky, what they tell you to do.
What do they tell you to do?
Well, they tell you to connect your earbuds to your phone.
Yeah.
Then close the case and keep it within 20 feet of the phone so it stays Bluetooth connected for half an hour. Well, when you close the case, the Bluetooth connection is closed.
Right.
Right.
So how does that work?
It doesn't. I had to get on with the engineers. What you need to do is open the case, have the earbuds connected to your phone, leave it open for about 3 or 4 minutes. That lets the patch download.
Then you can close it and it'll finish. Oh, that's right. Nutty. So they sent out the wrong instructions.
They sent out the wrong. And the first connector says, no, this isn't checked. And I said, that's fine, but the second you close the case,
it turns it off.
Connection drops.
Of course.
Right. Right, and if you read the directions, it says close the case with the buds inside and keep within Bluetooth range of your phone for 30 minutes.
Well, I'm glad you clarified that. Anybody listening's got the Amazon earbuds. You can get firmware updates for earbuds. Google's done the same with their latest Pixel buds. They've had to, so that's good to know. And you do it on the phone in the app in the Amazon app.
What you do is you just open up your phone, You can wear the earbuds, open the case, just something so the earbuds connect to the phone.
And then you open up the Amazon Echo app?
You open up the app.
Okay.
And then say, fine,
that's all you have to do.
An egg timer.
Nice.
And then close the case and just let it sit there for a half an hour update.
Thank you, Dr. Mom, for that update. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Dr. Mom is our Echo guru. Echo guru.
Leo,
thank you.
Leo, when you're testing your masks, it's anything orange juice. The way we test N95
is if you can smell anything.
Right. You have to do, if you get dental work done, you gained or lost more than 10 pounds, anything like that, you have to be refit, what's called fit testing.
Right.
And they wave a bottle of perfume. You can use vanilla, anything like that, under your nose.
Okay. So it doesn't have to be aerosolized. You just have to be able to smell something.
Well, the point is for you to smell it, there are aerosolized molecules. Think about it.
Right, of course. Otherwise, it wouldn't be in there. So this takes, I don't like these surgical masks because they really don't seal on the edges,
No, not at all.
But they give you the main point of wearing a mask, which is to keep your sneezes to yourself. But then if you put this mask fitter over a surgical mask, it actually closes up the edges like that. And now I'm only breathing through the material, which actually is very good, right? I mean, that's the surgical mask material is the melt-blown poly, right?
Right. That's better. I will tell you, however, 90% of people who say they can't breathe through a mask is nonsense. The AMA just sent out a paper at their forums saying that if you've got lung condition so bad that wearing a mask,
you shouldn't be on an airplane, that's for sure.
You shouldn't be out in public. You should not be leaving your home.
You should be home if you've got emphysema or whatever.
Right, because the risk of getting COVID, even if it's just in your lungs,
it'll kill you.
Exceeds the risk of wearing the mask. Yeah. But just for people in chat room and stuff, the ADA does not prevent any store from saying you can't come in if you can't wear a mask.
That's BS.
They have to do,
and so are those cards that you can get on Facebook that say, I am illegally prohibited.
Right. What they have to do is offer you what's called a reasonable accommodation, which can be, give me your grocery list, I'll go shopping for you.
I wish people would just knock it off. You're not wearing the mask for yourself. You're wearing it for me and all the other vulnerable people around you. That's why we wear these. So be a mensch. Wear a mask. Now,
look at my latest Twitter post.
I will.
Picture I put up, and you'll know what I think about it.
Now, what was the other thing I was going to ask you about? Golly, I forgot. So this is because it's 3D modeled to my face, but I guess if something changed my face, I'd have to get a new one. But gosh, it's easy to do. It's $20. It's made out of good material. So I feel like this is good. This is it. Well, at least it's a step up. I don't know if it's a 99% protection, but it's a step up. And then the face shield. Well, why does the face shield help? What does that help?
The face shield is supposed to prevent particles from getting into your eyes.
Which I don't want.
Getting on your,
so safety,
on your face
safety you glasses your face would work as well, right?
They work. They do not work alone.
Yeah. You need to wear both the mask and the shield.
Because I'll tell you though, everybody who says, well, I don't spit, I don't anything. Wear the face shield without the mask for about 2 hours. Yeah. Then look at the face shield.
Yeah, of course you spit.
They're disgusting. It's disgusting.
It's not even that you spit. When you talk, your vocal cords are aerosolizing your saliva, and it's coming out.
Right, exactly.
It doesn't have to be spit. In fact, it's worse if it's not.
Yeah, we wear those in the OR to keep stuff out of our eyes.
Right.
So in other words, when you're suctioning and stuff, you aerosolize. You don't want it in your eyes because the masks don't cover it. They're not sure it can be contracted through your eyes. But
right.
If it gets
might
on the skin
chance.
Of your face, then,
right.
then you get off and you rub your face.
Plus, with the face shield, you can't touch your face. So that
exactly.
helps, too. I think that's the other source of confusion is people, what you guys do for PPE in the OR is not what we're doing out in the real world. It's a different purpose entirely. We're protecting others, not protecting ourselves.
Well, the estimation of 99% effective, if you look at the CDC and the WHO guidelines, if you wear a mask and I wear a mask, the chance of you transmitting it to me is about 1%. There's your 99% effective.
Perfect.
Right.
If it's only 65% effective by itself, if we're both wearing them, it's 90% effective. By the way, the analogy I use is if you're walking around naked and you start peeing, you might get pee on the other guy. If you're wearing pants, that's better. If you're both wearing pants, that's best.
Oh, don't get me started on walking around naked. Every time I see somebody with their nose hanging out of their
neck. I know, the nose free.
That's the same as pulling on your tighty whities.
I know.
And letting the twig of your twig and berries hang out. Same thing.
I went to the grocery store like this. I got to get a shower cap, though, to protect my hair. But I went and I felt pretty good. You know, there was social distancing. They were doing everything right. I got home, took everything off carefully, took my clothes, put them in the wash, washed off, sterilized, you know, sprayed the mask fitter and the shield with. But before I took everything off, I went and I got my blood oximeter. And I put it on because I wanted to see. I've been wearing it for an hour and a half. No let up with the mask fitter, 97%.
Right. I mean, I love there's people who are posting, again, on the great source of misinformation, Facebook,
that
it lowers blood oxygen to 20%.
No.
My friend and I, who's a PhD pharmacist who was going to give you an earful about masks last week, but she's shy, said, you might lower the inspired oxygen from 21 to 20%, but if you a corpse has more oxygen in their blood
than 20%.
I mean, that's
I'm not dead yet.
Oxygen.
No, I was 97%. And so maybe it's down 1%, maybe, because it's normally maybe for me 98 to 99. But I'm not dying.
If somebody in the OR wears the mask, everything else for 12 to 14 hours.
Yes.
You do brain surgery.
Yes,
like
your doctor's not passing out.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
They get hot. They do get sweaty. They do get hot. They do get uncomfortable. I'll give you that.
Well, that's one reason I always bring multiple masks, because as soon as it gets damp, I switch it out.
Yeah. I have a mask in my car, a mask in my purse, a mask clipped to my fanny belt, because when I walk my dog in the morning,
exactly.
I don't wear the mask unless I see somebody coming down the road, and then
exactly.
I'll put it on.
Yeah. We got these nice twit masks. So I think with my cotton from your sister and the silk charmeuse and a layer of either the melt-blown plastic. The thing is, when you're doing the fitter, you got to have something breathable because you're not going to get air from the side. So you better be able to breathe through it. But this, I can breathe through the cotton chiffon silk three-layer perfectly well, just as well as I do with this. This is very breathable, too. And so as long as I can breathe, I feel good.
Be careful on silk, though. Silk is notorious for not being breathable.
Yeah, I understand. I think that that's when you're wearing it. But if you put some Silk Charmeuse over your face, you'll see you can breathe quite well through it. It's I don't know. And it's not supposed to be a tight weave. It's static that it's stopping.
You have a that's a loose weave, so things do get through. But, I mean, you thought about in Japan stuff, silk kimonos, if you've ever been
they're hot.
Silk sheets, they're hot.
Yeah,
they
no, break. In fact, I have some silk handkerchiefs that are a thicker silk you cannot breathe through. The charmeuse is pretty light, actually. Uh-oh, I can't get out of this thing.
What's Jim's Twitter? What's Jim's chat room handle? All private email.
The charmeuse, I can breathe through pretty well.
Yeah. Jim DeRuvo, if he'll send me his chat room handle, I'll send him a copy of the email I got from Amazon. So
thank you. That would be great. Just paste the link in the chat room. That's all you need to do.
Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Mom.
You got it. Okay, bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Yes, it's time once again to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, overheating earbuds, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number if you want to call and talk about high tech, 888-827-5536. Melissa, very patient, hanging on from Brainerd, Minnesota. Hi, Melissa. Melissa, come to the phone. I feel bad because we kept you on hold. Hey, Melissa, you're on the radio. She doesn't know it, so I'm going to put her on hold and go to John. We'll get her back. Kim will wake her up. John from Newport Beach, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, John.
Hello, Dr. Leo. This is a total pleasure after years of listening.
Thank you. Thanks for being so patient, too. I appreciate it.
Sure. Hey, I have one comment by the last caller. XPRIZE has put out a challenge for the next generation face mask.
Oh, how cool.
Supposedly, you know, in goals.
XPRIZE is a Google thing that they've handed out a lot of money, as much as $1 million prizes. So what's the prize for making a better face mask?
Well, it's not a Google function.
I thought it was. Okay.
If you go to xprize.org,
uh-huh.
You can read up on it.
Yeah.
/prizes/next-gen mask.
Yeah.
And
I see it. Yeah.
I didn't research it far enough to understand what the prize win is. It's usually pretty high up there.
Yeah. It's really cool. They've done prizes for a variety of things. So that's really great. Cool.
I started following them from the beginning.
I just bought on Kickstarter. It may be goofy. It probably doesn't work, but I thought it was hysterical. It was $100. It's a hard plastic mask with a battery in it. You have to charge it via USB. It has a UVC light inside and a vortex. It passes through the air both in and out through this UVC chamber to kill anything before you're breathing in and before it gets passed back out. I bet you it weighs about 5 pounds, so I'm not sure it'll be very comfortable, but I thought it'd be kind of interesting to see. There is some very interesting stuff going on. That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what can I do for you?
Sure. Thank you. So I bought a Fujitsu ScanSnap scanner a couple years ago.
Yep.
And predominantly use it for scanning business cards into their program, which is called CardMinder.
Okay.
So they've made an announcement that they don't support CardMinder for Apple going forward into the next iOS update.
Yeah.
But they do have something called ScanSnap Home, and their documentation says it's not going to support the images of a business card going forward.
Thank you, ScanSnap.
Right.
Thank you.
It's only been, I bought it somewhere in 2018.
Well, that's what's happened. You know, and Apple's moved away from 32-bit software. They haven't supported that on the iPhone, if ever, I think. And then you can't run any 32-bit software on Catalina, the latest version of macOS. So it's my suspicion that ScanSnap, like a lot of older companies, just are giving up. It's not a big enough market for them to rewrite everything from scratch. So, but the good news is, nowadays, honestly, you want business cards primarily. What are you scanning?
Well, I turned around and scanned everything that I have, but one function I'm really worried about is my business cards, because I ended up now with 3,000 of them.
So the good news is there are a million, well, not a million, but more than half a dozen anyway, programs for iOS and Android that will take your camera phone, you don't need even a separate scanner, snap a picture of a business card, it'll scan it in, it'll put it in your contacts, and you're done. There's a number of them. We mentioned earlier, we were talking about scanners, Google Keep will do that for free. I used a contact program, I think it was called Contacts Plus, that for a fee will do that. And the reason I think they do a better job is because humans are taking the image. You take the image, and then humans, probably very low-paid humans in India, are looking at it and actually making sure that the computer scan is correct, which gives you a very good result. That's Contacts Plus, contactsplus.com. Okay. So there are a lot of ways to do this. And frankly, you don't need to bring a scanner around with you. You got a phone. Every time somebody hands me a business card, I snap a picture of it and give it back to them, saying, I know these are expensive. Yeah. I just got everything. Plus, it's in my contact list now.
Well, so after going through several tech support individuals, I want to give a shout out to a tech support man named John at Fujitsu that actually made it work, that I got the images transferred over to their new program.
Oh, good.
We'll go forward.
Lovely.
So thank you, John, out there, Fujitsu.
So Fujitsu is updating the software. They're just deprecating the old version in favor of a newer version.
I don't know. All their documentation says they're not supporting it going forward. So,
But you do have something that is going to be supported. Is that right?
Well, it works. It works.
That's all we care about.
I feel vulnerable, and I would like to be able to take the database and that electronic file and figure out how to port it over to another program and do what you said, which is now just go to taking camera shots.
Yeah. So there's two parts of what you've got. There's the original photo. You still have those. Or the scan, I should say, of the business card. Export those out. Because if you have that, worst case, you can always rescan it in, say, Google Keep. And then the data itself, so it doesn't put it in your contact list. It just makes a file with the
And it's one file. It's a CardMinder.
It uses its own CardMinder software. That's it. Okay.
Yeah, so I've got
that's less than useful. Look and see. I'm sure there is a way to export that data, because who cares if it's in CardMinder? I want it in my contacts. That's where I want it.
Be vulnerable to one program.
Right. So I would bet you anything. Yes, it said, I'm looking at it right now. You can export data into Outlook, Address Book, Excel, Salesforce. Because you can export it, you can either export it into the format of the thing you're going to use if it supports that, like Address Book, or failing that, there's that thing we were talking about, CSV, comma separated values. That's kind of a default.
Right.
If you can get any database into a comma separated value, you can import it, modify it. It's yours. That's a standard format. Doesn't require any special software.
Right.
All spreadsheet programs, for instance, will automatically read CSVs and put each field into a column. So every contact list that I know of and every address book I know of will do the same. We'll read CSVs, including Google's own contacts, which is what I use. So the key is exporting it now from the CardMinder into a form that will be golden forever. CSV is one.
But the issue is none of those will export the image of the business card. They'll export the data.
There's got to be a way to save that image.
I can't find it.
That's weird. You know what? Dig around. Are you using it on a Mac?
Yes.
Dig around. There will be somewhere, maybe obscure and hidden away, where the photos are, because it has to store them somewhere. What I would do is right click. This is if it doesn't have a data file. If it has a data file, right click on the data file and say open package. or explore package contents, because that what looks like a data file may actually be a folder containing a lot of things, including original photos. That's how Apple does it with its Photos app, for instance. There is a folder inside that, quote, data file that's actually the photos. It may be in its card. If there's a CardMiner data file, it may be in there. It may even be in the CardMiner program itself. Explore around. And your real tool there on any Mac is Command-click or right-click on the file and open contents. Because on a Mac, icons are not monolithic things. Very often, an icon is merely a folder, a hidden folder, that once you open contents, you'll see, oh, there's another folder inside that icon that says original photos or something like that. They're going to store it somewhere, and there will be a way to get that because those photos still exist. So you know they're there. Those images have not disappeared. And it might, if you, it's, you know, we put a link in the show notes to the ScanSnap user guide, the CardMiner user guide. They may say that somewhere buried deep within the pages. But if not, there's no way. Those photos exist, right? Because you see them. That means they're somewhere. They may be hidden so that you can't get, you know, easily see them and modify them. But they're somewhere. And I'm sure that you can find them. You can one by one, I guess, drag them to the desktop. But I think there's going to be a better way to get them all at once. If you've got thousands of cards scanned. And your instinct, by the way, I love what you said. I want to get it in a format that I won't be reliant on any third party. That's exactly what you want. For all your data, ideally you don't store it in what we call a proprietary format, a format that one company owns and maintains. You store it in a format that every other program can read, or that you can at least convert into something every other program can read. That's where you want your data. You never want to be dependent on a single company, because as happened to you, they may say, yeah, we're not going to support the Mac anymore. Yeah, it was good while it lasted. We're done. Your instinct is very good. Get it into a non-proprietary format. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, will continue taking calls. Our show today brought to you from the beautiful LastPass studios in beautiful LastPass, USA. We love LastPass, not only because they bought the studio naming rights, but really because they're fantastic. And one of the things that LastPass does so well is protect your business. We've been using LastPass here at TWIT, the enterprise version, since, oh gosh, it's been some years since one of our engineers put all of the passwords in a public website. He couldn't remember them, so he just put them so it was easy to remember. But that was a problem. See, the problem is your employees in a business have access to the keys to the kingdom, your checking accounts. They can log into your databases, your customer records, and all that. And they're going to be, just as anybody would be, tempted to use easy-to-remember passwords, reuse passwords, write passwords on Post-it notes, which they stick to their screen, all of which you don't want. You want security, especially now more than ever, because your employees have gone home. They're using their own devices. They're using their own applications in the same places they use your work applications. There's new threats. People going after them all the time because of COVID. There's new regulations. Strong security is tough. You need to give your IT department a hand and protect yourself with LastPass. Luckily, LastPass provides IT with strong security that's easy to use for your employees. That's important, because if it's hard, they're not going to do it right. And easy to manage for your security folks. From shadow IT to apps to mobile and cloud services, LastPass's access solutions give you visibility and control over every access point to your organization and your organization's most important data. That's really key. Not only is it a great password manager, they have single sign-on, they have multi-factor authentication. They have many ways that are, weirdly enough, more convenient for employees and more secure for you. LastPass authentication solutions also enable you to understand your employees' behaviors, to adapt authentication based on the user. That reduces friction and prevents threats, gives your IT department a view of every person using every resource, no matter where they are. 256-bit AES encryption. Your LastPass data is never encrypted anywhere except on device. The password is never transmitted to LastPass. They don't have access, so no one has access except you. Works everywhere, iOS, Android, Mac, PC, Linux, every browser. I just love LastPass. I've been using it for more than a decade, for a long, long time, and we've been using it at work for many years, and we are happy. Secure your business. Give your IT department the tools you need to keep your business safe. Go to lastpass.com/twit to find out how they can help keep your business productive and secure, no matter where your employees are working from. My employees love it. In fact, we give it a LastPass to my employees as a perk of employment, so they have their home version, their personal version, which integrates nicely with the enterprise version. It's a nice benefit, and it just encourages good password hygiene all around, and that's really, really important. Passwords, multi-factor, single sign-on, LastPass does it all. LastPass.com/twit. Whoa. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. My scream has been heard. I have a video of a speaker in Iceland, the Let It Out speaker in Iceland. Let me play this video back of it playing my scream that I recorded earlier with Johnny Jett. This is from the website lookslikeyouneediceland.com. This is great viral marketing. Let's see. I'm going to play the video. This is my scream.
Yeah. Ah!
Okay, that's a little anticlimactic, but climactic. There's my scream. In space, you know, no one can hear you scream. In Iceland, I think maybe the same. There's not many people around.
Yeah.
8888, ask Leo. Let's go on with the show, shall we? Melissa. Wait a minute. Didn't I just talk to Melissa from Brainerd, Minnesota? I got confused.
No.
I didn't. Hi, Melissa. I said somebody else's name when I pressed. I apologize. Now you're here. Hello.
You were having a Melissa Blonde moment.
I was. No, I picked you up and you were having a conversation. I didn't want to listen in.
That's okay. Here's my dilemma.
Yes.
I have not that it maybe matters, but it's an LG Stylo 5 smartphone. I commonly refer to it as a stupid phone, or maybe it's me. I don't know. But anyways.
It's a semi-smartphone.
Yeah, depending on the operator. I somehow put a code in.
Oh, no.
So when I shut the phone off,
yeah,
it fires what's called a secure setup code.
Yeah.
And the weird thing is I can't. Okay, it gives you 30 chances to try and figure it out.
Uh-oh.
I'm down to 5.
Oh, no.
It wipes everything.
Yeah.
So I am really, really cautious in the sense that I went and bought another phone identical to not have to risk
using
some stuff.
No, yeah. Well, okay, so here's the thing. By the way, this phone is a smartphone. It has face print. Recognition. It has fingerprint face recognition.
I'm not impressed.
But you locked it. You locked it with a PIN code, and I guess you forgot it.
Yes.
Yeah. And furthermore, you turned on a very useful feature, which is if somebody's trying to guess my code and they keep doing it wrong, it's just going to erase the phone. Now you won't lose the phone; it'll just erase it, and it'll be like you got it the first day you got it.
Right. But there's data on there that I don't want it to erase. So, how can I maybe, like, send, I heard that there's possibility I could send the phone to LG and they could unlock it.
Oh, I don't think you'll have to do that. First thing is, usually when you have an Android phone, you connect it to a Google account, correct?
Right.
So, backed up are your contacts, your calendar, all the things Google backs up. Including
with
settings. What have you lost?
One exception.
Photos?
The what? No, I don't. I like the photos, but the thing that is most critical to me is there's a little app on your phone that's called Voice Recorder.
Yeah. You got voice recordings?
The only way God gets a word in edgewise is when I'm sleeping. So I record my dreams, which is his conversation.
Oh, that's cool.
I don't want to lose those.
No, I don't blame you. And you're not backing those up in any way. And LG doesn't have a backup.
I had been backing up to some degree because I found them when I went into my email account, but they were not backed up from like May to July because I think my mistake was that I put it as backup when I'm Wi-Fi. Well, if I'm not on Wi-Fi, it's not backing up. And I'm like, another blonde moment.
So in theory, according to LG, in the upper left-hand corner of that screen that says you only have five more tries, there should be a thing that says forgotten the password. Do you see that?
Hang on. Actually, I keep shutting the phone off.
I don't blame you. Even when you're not unlocked it, it will still be backing up. So if you had set that voice memos up to back up on Wi-Fi and you're at home and it's been there, it's still backing up even if you can't open the phone.
But I can't. I wouldn't it show up in my Google account, though? As
well, it depends
up?
Where you're backing it up to, yeah.
Yeah, that's the other question.
Yeah, okay. It may be that...
The screen, as far as what it reads, when it opens up, it's a white screen at the very top left, secure startup. And then it says, all phone data will be lost forever after five more failed attempts. And then it gives my mother's phone number. Somehow I put my mom's home phone, not a cell phone, in there, probably for verification if I forgot it. But I don't know how to access to utilize that feature.
And I don't either. I'm looking at the information that says there should be something that says forgotten the password on that screen, but it sounds like there isn't. If that's the case, you can use your Google account password to unlock it. Hang on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So I'm not seeing a screen that this says I should be seeing. So that's, you're seeing something else. It has your mother's phone number, perhaps as a backup. Is there any other button that says anything like, you know, call to reset? Or, I mean, it just has the phone. What does it have the phone number there for? I wonder.
That's what I don't understand. Somehow when I went to set up the secure, I was able to enter some phone number.
Yeah, but what does it say around that phone number? Does it say anything or just shows a phone number?
Nothing. It just says after failed attempts, and then it says the phone number underneath it. So it says if you... After five more failed attempts, you lose everything, and then it lists her phone number. Then it lists a bar where you put your code, and then underneath that bar it says to change the settings, go to security settings. I'm like, I can't do that. You won't let me.
Of course, they don't want this to be too easily defeated because that's the whole point.
I understand that. I want to be able to not lose what I've got.
So what program were you using for the voice recorders? Was it a program that came with the phone?
Yes. It's a little, shows a little red microphone kind of on it, and it says voice recorder on that stylo.
So the question is it an LG program or a Google program? If it's a Google program, it would back up to your Google account, and you'd be able to see it. You can't. So I'm thinking it's maybe an LG program. Do you have an LG account?
No.
You might have set one up when you get the when you got the phone.
Okay.
That's the question, because this is all you care about, right? Otherwise,
right.
Otherwise, you're fine.
Nothing else.
Right.
Yeah.
And you said that voice recorder says it backs up when you're on Wi-Fi.
Yeah, actually, it's called an audio recorder, and it's got little lines like an audio speaking.
Right.
You know.
I think that is probably a Google recording app. LG has its own voice recorder app. Here it is, LG audio recorder. Okay, let me see if I can see the icon. I bet you that's it.
It's red.
Yeah.
It's red.
So my guess is that you probably, you should see if you have an LG account. Because if it's backing up, it's probably backing up to LG's cloud.
Okay.
And if you have in order to set that backup up, you must have at some point created the LG account. Is it backing up? Even if you can't unlock the phone, it's backing up when it's on Wi-Fi. So the chances are all the voice memos are stored somewhere, depending on who that program came from. It's my guess. Well, LG does offer an audio recorder. So it's my guess that it's on the LG cloud. And if you had set up backup, then it's likely that you set up an account so that you can get to it again. Otherwise, there's no point to back it up.
Yeah, and I don't know. Do I just need to Google LG Cloud or to find out, you know, if I have a...
Yeah, I don't know if you can log into... You don't need another phone.
Too late.
Okay. What I'm hoping will happen... Well, then in that phone, try to set up... Okay, so that phone should have the same recorder. And you can go through the process just to see if your LG account, you know, maybe you created an account and used a password that you just use for kind of casual use. Try to log into that account. So go into that recorder app on the new phone. Actually, this might be useful. Go into that account on the new phone and that recorder and see where it backs up to. And
well, it just gives me an option of the three dots on the right when I click on it.
Is there an LG Cloud app on the phone?
Hang on, let me see.
I only have 30 seconds before we come back.
Okay, it has timer, tags, and settings. Okay, let's go to settings. General, save to SD card, or auto gain, adjust my
phone. Look on the phone, see if there's an LG account app as well. Because that's what you kind of need. I think that program is from LG, in which case the backups will be in your LG Cloud account. So your job is to see if it's there before you try any more PIN numbers. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Way too hot to trot. It's like 85 degrees out. 8888, ask Leo. That's a phone number. Ron's on the line from Downey, California. Hey, Ron.
Hey, good to talk to you again, Leo.
Nice to talk to you. What's up?
So, you know, I like music as much as the next guy. And I probably, over the course of time, have uploaded all my CDs, probably 3,500 songs, to Google Play Music.
Yes.
And I got an email from them this week from Google that says, hey,
they're moving it to YouTube.
Right. So is it as simple as just transferring all my songs to that? Is that YouTube Music, is that a paid service or is it a free?
It is. So Google is eliminating Google Play Music. I am in the same boat you are. I've uploaded more than that, probably 60,000. So I've uploaded a ton of stuff to Google Music. And one of the beauty parts of Google Play Music was not only do you have access to all the streaming music like any other music service, Spotify or Apple Music, you can upload your own music to it. And they store it for you in the cloud, which is awesome. So Google's getting rid of Google Play Music. They're replacing it with YouTube Music. The good news is you subscribe. I presume you continue to subscribe to Google Play Music, right?
Yeah, but I don't pay for anything.
Oh, you must.
No, I just upload my songs and I just listen to them on my phone. I can download them to my phone.
Yeah, you're paying for Google Play Music. I think so. Go to music.google.com and check your account out. What will happen for paid users, because you can't store anything there unless you're paid, I'm pretty sure. So, you could upload your music for free? Really? Oh, okay. Well, you might have to pay then.
Yeah.
So what will happen, and I just got it, by the way. When you log in, when you go to play.google.com, you'll have a... They did it slowly, so I just got mine. You'll have a screen that says, oh, enjoy your music library and YouTube Music. Right. And the big button that says transfer. Have you seen that yet?
Yes, I've seen that.
Okay.
I haven't hit the transfer button yet because I didn't know what I was...
Well, they're going to shut Google Music down. So whatever you've got in Google Music, in theory, you're going to have in YouTube Music. It's just a new name with a different look. So I'm going to press the transfer button. And what'll happen is I'm going to eventually... they're going to say, hey, all your music's in YouTube. You can stop using Google Play Music. Now, I didn't realize they had a free tier. So if you've been using the free tier, then presumably whatever you got out of the free tier, you will get with YouTube.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it's like Spotify. There's a paid version with...
I guess so. I guess I'd forgotten that. I bought Google Play Music the minute they offered it. So I've never experienced it for free. I'm surprised they let you upload for free, because that's a bit of storage they're giving you. It's pretty good.
Oh, yeah, that was great. That's why I did it.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm now seeing a screen that says transferring your library may take a few hours. We'll let you know when it's finished. So they've been rolling this out. I know a lot of people who have done this already. I kept looking and I never got it, but now I've got it. So, yeah, I guess you could do 50,000 titles for free before. Presumably, they're going to do the same thing. You'll get ads, just like Spotify, just like you. Apparently, you must have gotten ads right on Google Play Music, right? I'm sure there's got to be a way they paid for it.
Yes, but I could listen to my. But if I wanted to listen to my,
that was free.
Music, it would just pay. It would just go from my library.
I don't know for sure that they're gonna not continue to offer that. But I would guess they have the same thing.
All right.
I think really it's more like a change in name and look. It's not like there's, it's magically getting moved to Singapore. It's probably the same storage that you had before. They just have a different interface to it.
Right, and the branding of YouTube.
And the branding of YouTube. This is annoying, but this is Google in a nutshell. They tire of things easily, and they've moved on. So I'm just looking. Yeah, if you're a Play Music subscriber, your billing information will be changed. Subscription, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't say anything explicitly about free. It's, yeah. I mean, if you don't do it, eventually it's just going to stop working. So you might as well do it.
All right. Hey, appreciate that.
Call back and let me know if it didn't work.
All right.
You can yell at me. I'll admit my failure. But I
yell on that. Yeah. I'll yell in Iceland.
I think the theory is whatever you had in Google Play Music, you're now going to get on YouTube Music. It's just this. It's just rebranded, basically.
All right.
But you know, with Google, they may have said, "And we're going to take this opportunity to charge you."
Right.
You know, you can use Google Takeout to re-download all of your songs if you want to do that. All 50,000 of them, or 30,000 of them. That's takeout.google.com. That's one good thing Google does, is nothing's stuck in Google. So if you were worried that you were going to lose it, or even if you did lose it, I think you could then go to Takeout and take it out. But you could do that now if you want. The nice thing about Takeout, I recently did this with my photos, is you press a button, you say, yeah, I want to take it out. And it says, all right, we're going to email you because you got a lot of stuff. We're going to email you when it's ready. And then they'll send you an email with links. So you don't actually have, you can do this now, and they'll save it, and then if it fails, at least you have a way to download it. So maybe that's the thing to do. Before you press OK, go to takeout.google.com, arrange to download all your music. You won't actually download it. They'll just make files for you. And then if the transfer didn't work, you could get it out. That'd be the safest thing.
All right. Appreciate it. Thanks.
All right. Take care.
Bye. You too. Bye.
And if it didn't work, Iceland is screaming for you. I'm still screaming in Iceland. Mark in Burbank, California. Hey, Mark, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, good afternoon. How are you today?
Now I'm feeling better. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for the warning. I bought about a year ago a Lenovo laptop, 17-inch.
Yep.
Pretty good little unit. But
oh, yeah.
I've got a little problem and a couple different things. But the main thing I've been concerned about is when I go to the pictures, let's just say I'm on email, I want to attach a picture or a text, I want to attach a picture, or I just go to the picture section folder and only out of, let's say, on a page of each folder may have 150 pictures in it, different folder.
Yeah.
Maybe 10 of them I can see the picture. The rest of them I can't see the picture, so I can't find the picture I'm looking for.
Oh, that's no good. It's just blank? Or it has an icon that shows a broken file or something like that?
No, I mean, you can, if you click on it, you can get the picture.
Oh, the picture's there. Oh, hallelujah.
Yeah, the pictures are there.
So you just don't get the thumbnail.
Yeah, exactly. And you might get the title, like here's one that says three clubs, but I don't remember what three clubs, what I don't title everything, and everything's not, most of them just have the numbers.
Right. You're running Windows 10, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what you want to do is rebuild the thumbnail cache, C-A-C-H-E. Okay. And there are a number of ways to do it. You could even Google it. But probably the easiest way is with a program that's actually very useful. I don't know if a lot of people know about it on Windows 10 called the Disk Cleanup Tool.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So you could just hit Windows key and start typing, you know, Disk Cleanup, okay, and then hit return. It'll open it up. And you can click this PC, then click the drive, then select properties. You get, actually, this is how you get to it without doing that. You'll get the disk cleanup button. Check the thumbnails option. Uncheck all the others. It'll delete the thumbnail cache and then rebuild it. This may take a little time, not long.
Oh.
And I think this will fix it.
So go to the disk cleanup tool.
And clean up your thumbnails. Yeah, you're basically deleting the cache and then it rebuilds it.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Dick and me, we are family. It's time for the Giz Whiz, our gizmo wizard, Dick DiBartolo. Everybody dance. Woo! Dick joins us each week to share with us a gizmo or a gadget. You remember you talked about those Wowie toothbrushes that you have the games on them?
Yes.
So Wowie, out of the blue, I didn't ask for it. They sent me two of them. Of course, I am not I'm not going to listen to Baby Shark while I'm brushing my teeth. I'll be honest with you. Okay. But I know some little kids, three of them, who just loved them.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and they play the games, but I talked to Mom. She's a little mad at me. She says, I can't get Baby Shark out of my head.
Oh, my God. Oh, my gosh.
She says, the rule is now the kids can't use those toothbrushes when I'm in the room.
Oh, that's
But it's great because it does tell you, you know, you have to keep going. You can't keep playing. You know, it's she said it really works, so that's really good. Six, eight, and ten, I think the kids are. So they love
it. Oh, super.
Yeah.
Super.
No,
I thought that was how many teeth they had.
Yes.
No, okay.
The little one only has six, but she's working on it. So,
you know, I got that email, too, about having to move my music.
It's okay. Knox Harrington in our chat room has a free account. He says it moved fine, and all the benefits of the free account moved over, too.
So, oh, okay.
It's okay to move your music to YouTube.
Okay. Well, they said, are you sure? This looks like old disco music. I said, yes, move it.
We don't really want to save that.
I said, that's the only thing I'm saving. All right, so I have what I think is a really neat gadget. As a matter of fact, I was playing with it, and Dennis walked in and said, what is that? I said, well, it's a clamp desk lamp.
Yeah.
That you can set for 3,000K. 4,500K or 6,500K.
I have so many things you've recommended, and I still have that desk lamp that you recommended that does that years ago from Satechi.
Yes.
Remember that one? I love that.
Yes, I do. Well, this is a little clamp-on lamp, and the little control box is in the line. So you can, once you set it for the brightness you want, and I like the warm white, the 3000K, then there's 10 modes of brightness that you can use
within this. Because this would be great for reading in bed, right? This is a gooseneck.
Yes, yes.
Gooseneck lamp.
Before you go all the way down, tell me what you think it costs.
That's got to be $99.
Well, you're off by about $83. Leo, it's $16.
Oh, that's great. Is it an LED? It must be an LED.
It's an LED light, okay.
See, that's what's changed.
10,000 hours.
Because I used to have, what was that lighting technology that you couldn't get electrocuted? So they would put them on wires and stuff. And then my parents, when I was a kid, had, remember Tensor lamps?
Oh, my God. Tensors was like, everybody, my God, you have a tensor
that
lamp?
That was so big in the 60s. But it was incandescent, so it got really, really hot.
Yes.
But they were aimed and they were super bright. They were great for reading in bed. And that's what I need. I need a reading in bed light.
And making franks.
You could do that too.
Yes.
What was it? There's a more modern thing, but it also gets hot. LEDs have
Halogen?
Yeah, halogen. That's it. Yeah, LEDs have transformed lighting.
Oh.
And they used to be expensive, but this is cheap.
This is amazing.
Yeah.
So it terminates in a USB, but then they include an AC, which they say is UL approved.
So you could even plug it into your computer. This could be a computer light.
This is great. Like on an airplane or something, assuming someone gets on an airplane within the next 10 years and you want it over your keyboard, it's perfect. Yeah, I like this a lot.
And now, is it plastic? Now, is it cheap, kind of plasticky?
The unit I think is metal. What I like, Leo, is the gooseneck is really firm. I am so tired of gooseneck lights that you set them the way you want, and as you're trying to read or type, the lamp is slowly falling in front of
you. You don't
face.
Want a floppy gooseneck. That's no.
You don't want no. This comes with little Viagra tablets in the box.
I am buying several of these.
Yeah, I think you'll like it. A lot.
This is great.
And I don't understand this at all, but Chad said you will. It is CRI 90+.
Oh yeah, you got the CRI 90+ certification.
Yeah, that's then the coloring rendering.
That's the color. Yeah, yeah.
Color rendering.
It means
index.
It's accurate color, which means you could also use it for your Zoom calls.
Oh
yeah, as a fill light or something. Actually, I'm ordering 5 more. This is great. This is great. Yeah, that's why that's who you want that. You want accurate color. You know, there's sunlight and there's daylight and there's indoor incandescent lighting, different color temperatures. And you want those to be accurate for your camera. This is good. This will be great for Zoom.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah. I literally just ordered 4. That's how much I trust you, Dick Bertone.
And don't be shocked when the box comes, because the box is like really little. And then I go, wait a minute, is the thing really in there? And then you take it out and unwind it. And enough, it's great. It's great.
So it has three different colors. So you can, you know, because daylight wakes you up. It's got a lot of blue in it.
Oh, it does.
But when you're reading at night and you want to get sleepy, you don't want to have a lot of blue. You want a warmer light, and so it can do that, which is great.
Yeah. And then you have 10 degrees of brightness. There's an up and down arrow once you get the color that you like.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, it's
That's
neat.
That's really nice. So it's dimmable. And LEDs mean it's going to last a long time, I think.
They say 20,000 hours.
That's like the rest. I will be dead before these aren't any good anymore.
I think a lot. No, you won't. What, 20,
and the clamp
hours?
Is good. How big is the clamp?
The clamp is great. I believe it's an inch and a half.
Okay.
I have it. Let's see. Let me see if it goes for. I have it on a shelf. Yeah, I think it can go an inch and a half.
So you cannot buy for love or money lighting panels for your Zoom calls, because everybody in the world is starting to do that. They want better lighting and stuff. This would be a perfect solution. It's going to be a little spot, so you maybe
it's going to be a little spot.
Put a diffuser over it or something like that. But there's a lot. This is a great solution. Or you know, you could do the eye light. A lot of television news anchors don't get a lot of sleep. They have bags under their eyes, like me. So what we do, Peter Jennings, late Peter Jennings used to do this. They have what they call an eye light, which is a light just for the bags under your eyes to flatten them out. I've always wanted an eye light, so now I have 2.
Yeah, yeah. Kitty Carlisle, do you know who that person is?
I do. You told me some stories about her.
In her To Tell the Truth desk, there was a little cutout with a tiny Klieg light in there just for her.
It's called an eye light.
Yeah, there you go.
It flattens out the wrinkles. You still have them. You just can't.
They just look great.
It's the difference. It's like it's like the moon. If you light it from the side, you can see all the craters. But if you light it straight on, it doesn't look so cratered.
Yeah, well,
I got
God
a moon face.
Lighting. What can I tell you?
Really, this is maybe the best thing you've done in the whole week. I love this.
Okay, yeah. Good.
Dick DiBartolo, you'll find more information and a link to buy this. That's the link I clicked on Amazon, gizwiz.biz. He's our gizmo wizard, GIZWIZ.BIZ. While you're there, play the What the Heck Is It contest. Brand new contest started at the beginning of the month. A close-up picture of a gizmo or a gadget. You know, okay, I don't want to say what it is because I'm pretty sure It's a cake mold. But okay, I'm not going to say that.
No, I'm not. I'm not hinting either way.
Yeah. Or actually, I think I do know what it is. If you know what it is, or even if you don't, submit your guess to GizWiz.biz. You could be in the running for an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. Dick's site also has other great stuff, including Mad Collectibles. We all loved Mad Magazine. He's got his famous book, Good Days in Mad, and many other things. GizWiz.biz. Don't forget the GizWiz podcast every week with Chad Johnson at GizWiz.tv. Thank you, Dickie D.
Thank you, sir. See you next week.
Have a wonderful, wonderful week. Stay safe in the Big Apple. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.